This is the place where sports opinions collide. Get in sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Inch. Joining me as usual is BZ430. What up, B?
What up, though?
Mr. Disrespect?
Mr. Disrespect. Mr. No Disrespect. depending on how I'm feeling on the day.
Yeah, Mr. Disrespect is here. Make sure you guys check out the No Disrespect podcast.
We was wild on the last one.
Y'all got to listen to the one that's coming up. Y'all got to listen. Very entertaining discussion about actors. A lot of disrespectful things said on that show, but y'all got to hear it to see what I'm talking about. FIFO's running a little late, but he'll be here. He'll pop in as usual. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for subscribing. The show's free, so share it with your friends. Tell everybody. As a warning, we are pro-black, but we're all inclusive. We love our white brothers and sisters. But it's interesting, and I can't wait till Ralph get here because I really want to know his take on this whole Jimmy Butler. All of y'all, but I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about Jimmy Butler. Because of the things that I've heard said about Jimmy Butler from other podcasts, because I'm trying to get some inside knowledge behind the scenes that some of them mostly have.
It's confused. That whole situation is very confusing.
Yeah,
because I see reports of like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's all over the place. But we'll get that. You know how we do on this show, man. We bury the lead on this show, so we'll get to that later. But I think one of the biggest news items of the day that happened around 4 or 5 today is L. Bell, man. Le'Veon Bell, he didn't show up, man. He didn't show up. He proved everybody wrong.
All that money on the table, man.
I just don't understand.
Was it close to $15 million?
Bro, $14.5 million,
yeah. Oh, he left that all on the table.
Boy. As a running back, too, that's the thing. Like, it's not more about the money. It's about that position and how –
the lifespan of that position.
Especially when you the hottest. Like, think about a year ago, he was the best running back in the league. And now he's, like, arguably bottom five.
Yep.
That's crazy. So that money that he gave up, that guaranteed money that he gave up just by showing up, is he really think he's going to get that back in free agency? Or even is he even a free agent now that the season doesn't count?
So that's the confusing part, because the reports were that he had to show up to sign the franchise tender in order to be eligible for free agency next year, but they seem to have found, and this was reported last week, that that's not necessarily true, and it has something to do with the way the tag works. So that's why he didn't show up at all. And if you think about what happened with Dez, it kind of makes sense. I don't know how well Le'Veon's been working out, how hard he's been working out, and if he was in football shape, but what happens if he tears his ACL?
But like a dead situation.
Yeah. So what happens with that? So then now he's really in trouble. So is your future earnings worth, you know, the potentially losing this $14.5 million? Like, to us, we're looking at him like, God dang, $14.5 million. Mm-hmm. But shit, you know, a meal would be good right now for us.
Boy, I'll do some things for $1,000 right now.
So, you know, but that. You know, the way they look at money, the way they get money is different. So, obviously, it seems to me that he's definitely taking care of his finances. He feel like he has enough to last the rest of his life, and that he's made sound decisions with his money. So, I don't know, man. But, yeah, I think he is going to be a free agent. He just won't be able to play, of course, this season.
But my thing is, he played it smart, I guess, if it's more of – if I did come back and sign that little, you know, horrible that franchise tag contract, whatever you want to call it, and then I end up like Dez and break my – like, then later on, I like, that was it for me.
Right,
and then I'm not even going to get no more money after that. Because, like, what players always say, or, like, former players now, they always say, like, you could be in shape, but you're never in football shape until you play, like, in the game.
Because how old is Le'Veon Bell? Like, what, 27, 28, something like that?
Yeah, I think he might be 29. Like, he might be going into it. Yeah,
so he about to hit that graveyard age in running back.
Exactly.
30.
And he's asking for what? Todd Gurley money, which is like what?
He's 26.
26?
Okay, 26.
Yeah, so he's good.
He's still got about 3 more prime years left.
And he's essentially sat out, what, 3 seasons? With Adrian the suspension,
Peterson, bro.
With the suspension?
Yeah. Adrian Peterson.
He's
a
young Adrian Peterson. So he's avoided the wear and tear on his body for this year. Because didn't they give him like 400-something-plus carries or touches last year?
They overfeed him. It's gluttony over there.
So they did the same thing to DeMarco Murray. He ain't been the same since when he left Dallas. That year he had his breakout year. So I get it, man, because the franchise.
He's thinking long term. He's definitely thinking long term.
What do you think he will get? What kind of deal do you think he'll get moving forward?
Well, I think that was the issue because he wanted wide receiver running back money, right? Or was that Jimmy Graham?
Graham wanted wide receiver money.
Yeah. And I think Le'Veon was along those same lines as well. But I think he'll still get paid top dollar. I mean, he's still talented. Like, he still can catch and run it out the backfield. He's still top five, you know, in the league. So, yeah, he'll get paid like it. But he wants the financial security that comes with it instead of playing on a 1 year basically rental. So I think
I could see a team like the Jets, or maybe not the Eagles because Jay Ajayi will come back next season.
Man, he would be nice with Carson Wentz,
or even in Houston. Houston could probably.
Oh man,
Houston might be able to pay him. But, yeah. I can see him – for me, for him is obviously fully guaranteed. He wants damn near a fully guaranteed contract. Yep. So, I can see a team doing, what, a 3-year, $45 million?
Mm-hmm. Probably something like that, yeah.
That's – to me, for a 26-year-old, that's the most I would do anyway.
Yeah, and they're not going to franchise him next year because that's $25 million.
Yeah.
So
they're going to trade him.
He's going to get traded or they're going to have to work out a deal. So if you think about it, they either going to – even though he lost 14.5, if they franchise, we get 25 mil. So, okay, that's fine. Or he'll trade and get the long-term financial security that he's looking for. So did he play it right?
Well, someone made the theory that there's another team that said, don't worry about it, we'll take care of you. Like, if you sit out this year or – someone saying, like, there's no such – like, we've never really seen this before.
No,
from like, a superstar player.
Right, in this prime year.
To sit out a whole season just because of a contract dispute.
Right.
There's someone saying, like, it's got to be another team telling, like, on the phone with him, like, we want you. We can wait. We'll give you this contract. Just do what you've been doing. Just sit out. Take care of yourself.
It's possible, but – I think what we're seeing is we're seeing a rebellion by the players to the way the NFL treat their players with these contracts, these non-guaranteed contracts. And, you know, the worst thing that could have happened for Le'Veon and anybody that comes after him is that James Conner stepped in and he's basically stabilized that position. And what I like that Le'Veon is doing is that he's been fully supportive of James Conner throughout, so they can't use that against him.
Well, he really doesn't have a choice because Connor's story with leukemia.
No, it's great. It's great.
Can't diss him like that.
But even the optics looks good because they always, the media,
yes,
tend to take some stuff like that and try to twist
they
it.
They do.
So I'm glad that he's, obviously it seems like he's doing a PR thing by showing a little him voting for James Conner to go to the Pro Bowl and shit like that and putting that on social media. But James Conner publicly said that Le'Veon called him and you know, congratulated him on balling out and stuff like that. Like, James Conner, this is great for him because he can get a starting job somewhere.
Yep.
You know, possibly even in Pittsburgh. Le'Veon's going to be fine either way.
I think it's guaranteed that he stays in Pittsburgh. Like, Conner is
the guy. He's a Pittsburgh type of back. Mm-hmm. Throwback, not all the way to Jerome Bettis, but just grind it out, you know, hardcore bowling ball type of running. And it's perfect. He's synonymous with that city, with their style, and it fits, man, and it works well. He can grind out the clock. So, and it's a great story, you know, like you said. But, you know, there was Earl Thomas. What happened with him? We saw what happened with him. And he broke his leg, and he didn't get taken care of. And he threatened to sit out, and then he came back. So there's the, do you love the game? Really, really love the game? Like, people tend to question you about?
I don't think no NFL player really loves the game more than money. because you're not doing.
There are like some that there are.
Okay, I won't generalize, so I won't say all of them. But it's you're gonna find that they're like 5% of the actual, because everybody. There's no There's no other career where you say that you only have about 5 to 10 years to make the
ones
most money
that
in
do,
your life.
The ones that do are not superstars. You see what I'm saying? So the superstars, they have way more leverage. They have way more on the line. Now those middle
and they can
to
make
lower,
money outside the game too, like endorsements and all that.
They love the game because they're not really going to get paid like that. So they have more at stake than Le'Veon Bell. So, but no, I get you. But yeah, it's been a point of contention for a while. Like we saw what happened with Kirk Cousins. I think he got guaranteed money, and everybody was happy about that because they felt like he's going to change these contracts.
Andrew Luck was supposed to be the one to get the fully, like the really big contract, but he only got like 80 mil out of the, I think he signed for what, 120, I think something like that. But everybody thought he was going to be like the one. The first player to get the fully guaranteed because he had the most leverage in the world. Like who else? Like without him on the Colts, they're Cleveland basically.
Yeah.
So
shout out to Frank Reich because he's doing a good job with that brother. Damn. And look at Frank Reich with Luck versus Frank Reich. Look, Carson Wentz without Frank Reich, kind of crazy. But Ian Rappaport reported. So it says NFL. Media's Ian Rappaport reported 5 years, $70 million, including more than $30 million in the first 2 years. So this is what Le'Veon turned down before the July deadline. And then the next day, he added some more details saying that only $10 million was guaranteed, and that was a signing bonus. And they were rolling guarantees, adding up to $32 million by year two and $45 million by year three. Which is similar to what Gurley got, but it was less. It was $11.5 million less than the full guarantee Gurley got at signing about a week later. So, wow. It says $14 million is a lot of money, but yeah, brother feel like he can get more. You know, more next year. So,
I hope he does. I hope. Cause like you said, like the pattern so far is when the players want to get paid, it's always some injury or something catastrophic. Yep. Like, I hope that's not the case with him. Cause and this is coming from a guy who grew up in Cincinnati, so I don't really care for the Steelers at all.
Right.
But as far as like seeing players get paid the money that, especially Le'Veon, like he's done a lot for that Steelers organization. Granted, he's put them in bad situations too, but as far as his character, he's changed his character a lot for the better.
So, if you're an organization, you're saying you would pay Le'Veon Bell. Does this,
if I'm desperate enough?
Yeah, because I guess my question is: does this behavior concern you guys? Like he could do this again?
Well, I mean, he's really did this because he didn't get paid his money that he felt like he deserved. It's not like, I mean, it seemed like his marijuana days, his piss coming in cloudy, his days are over.
True.
So I think this whole issue is just him. He's been wanting to be long-term with Pittsburgh. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like wanting to be, look, he's telling Pittsburgh, like, look, I want to be here long-term. Why y'all not paying me long-term money? Like this, I want to stay here and play for you guys. So what's the issue? So if I'm an organization and I see a guy that wants to get paid pretty well and he wants to be at the organization long-term, all right, come on. We're going to see what we're going to do. We're going to break you off, and you're going to play long-term and be productive.
And that's what. And this is where I think FIFO brought up that whole point of loyalty when it comes to football players and their teams. Mm-hmm. I always felt like that loyalty is only as long as your contract, basically. Mm. So if especially these players, they put their bodies on the line. Right. Every Sunday, and even then in the offseason, and we don't see what they do 6 days before leading.
Watch Antonio Brown Snapchat. He's freaking nuts.
Yeah.
So why are you not there has to be some reason for the Steelers to say, like, we're only trying to give you
Steelers,
a guaranteed 10.
But they don't pay people.
They don't.
They paid AB when he was acting out. They pay Big Ben, and he damn sure acts out.
You're
going to
pay the quarterback. But
I'm just saying, they're the three B's, right? He was a big part of them.
They didn't let some defensive guys walk and stuff, and they didn't pay them that much either.
Yeah, historically, this is what they do. They don't fire coaches, and they're very selective in where they invest their money because they have, you know, a cap. Like, it's only so much that they can, you know, give out to people. So to them, AB must be the guy that they feel that they can count on more than Le'Veon Bell, you know. So and I think they have a number. Like, the Steelers have a number. And if Le'Veon is coming in above that number, they're not going to budge. It's just not what they do. They have their values as an organization, as a company, and they stick to them. So Le'Veon's going to have to get paid elsewhere.
Man.
So, like Tomlin said, man, hostages. We want volunteers, not hostages.
Yeah, that was a good quote.
That was a really good quote.
That was an excellent quote. I can't even front. That was an excellent quote.
And
like, no one's giving Tomlin credit for, like, him winning these games without his superstar running back. Like,
I was telling y'all, like, man, winning is the best deodorant in sports.
This is disrespectful, Nick.
It's winning. Here's what my Steelers.
The deodorant, correct. Yes, I agree with you. But they can at least, be like, man, Tomlin, wow, no Le'Veon Bell.
Some people, the black commentators mention it. Like, they'll say, look at what he's been doing and the slander he got earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to big, the Steelers are one of the, what are they, Mount Rushmore of sports franchises in the NFL. So they're always going to get talked about, whether they're good, bad, or ugly. But when you're talking about players coming out, disrespecting other players, you have one player doing a holdout for a whole season. You have your quarterback talking about retirement for the last couple seasons. You have a wide receiver
Brett Favre did for five years.
You have a wide receiver doing Facebook Live in the middle of
overblown.
But I'm just saying, like, that's a lot of stuff to happen in the locker room. And that all goes back to the coach. Obviously, it's unfairly, but it has to, because, like, that's your locker room. You're supposed to be the captain.
13-3.
No, he obviously wins games. He's the second winningest coach after Belichick, and I think in the last, 10 years probably. Mm-hmm. But there is a point of criticism that you just can't deny. Like, even though it may be unfair, but at the same time, like, bro, you had to get your guys in shape, get them together. Like, this, you can't just, blame everybody else and not you.
If they were, and he wasn't. Like, if they were, like, the Facebook Live thing, it would frustrate me to no avail, because it was a whole new year and they were bringing it back up. And I think Le'Veon wasn't even in trouble last year at all, right?
Nah, I don't think so.
So, but they just kept bringing it up. Like, there's this criticism that, and that Tomlin, this harsh criticism that Tomlin receives as a winning coach that I've never seen. I understand that it's Pittsburgh and it moves the needle.
And that's also expectations with Pittsburgh, especially with the talent they have. Like, after that Super Bowl with San Antonio Holmes, like, catching the touchdown to win it, everybody thought, okay, this is their run. They're about to go on a run. Mm-hmm. They had a young AB at the time. They had a bunch of. They're probably the greatest organization at picking wide receivers, like, drafting random.
How they do it.
So they were like, we got young talent coming in and out the locker room. We got a franchise QB. We have a decent running game. We have a great O-line. Our defense isn't the steel curtain anymore, but now what defense is really good in the NFL? But as long as you can outscore your opponent, basically. And they can easily do that. So why aren't they in – why haven't they had more Super Bowl appearances since what? The last one they went to was with 2010 when they lost to Green Bay?
That last one they lost to Green Bay was.
Yeah. So it's like, it's been almost 10 years, and with the same roster, AB keeps getting better. Le'Veon Bell keeps getting better.
But they've had some injuries.
They've had injuries.
In the playoffs.
They've had injuries, but they lost to the Pats, like, at least five times.
Some teams just have your number, bro.
But if you have expectations that you should win a Super Bowl, like, this is your time to win a Super Bowl. The AFC, there's only one team to beat in the AFC in the last 10 years, and that's in New England.
Yeah, the Cheatriots.
The what?
Cheatriots. No, I feel you. I think a lot of that is media, and, you know, like I said, I have a family member that's a lifelong Pittsburgh Steeler fan. Like, when they on, he at the house, he got his bobblehead. Like, it's a religion.
He waving that towel around like Petey Pablo.
Like, it was so bad. This season started off so bad. He went to the game. And ever since he went to that game, they won that game, and they've been winning ever since.
Oh, so like, he think he the one,
bro? I don't know. I'm not saying he think he the one, but he was like, man, I gotta go see what's going on. He hopped his ass on a plane, bro, and went to Pittsburgh, went to their game to watch them play. Like, that's how invested he is.
Wow.
And you know, as a guy that's been following them, you know, and he's just turned 49, so we're talking about like half his life or whatever, or whenever he started watching. But I don't really hear him saying, and I know it's media driven, I don't hear him saying like a lot of the stuff that the media says, and he's a lifer. So I know that, you know, certain fans in the city and certain fans in the minority owners are calling for his job and stuff like that. I guess my overall point, I guess what I'm saying, man, is that, you know, the brother has managed through a situation that I don't know a lot of coaches would. If this was, put it to you this way, if this was Bill Belichick, what would they be saying right now?
Well, if this was Bill Belichick, he would got rid of half of that squad a long time.
But he would be getting so many props for, and like he always do.
Right.
Yeah, man, he would.
You know, so that's what I'm talking about. So I'm glad you brought it up, B. We're going to give this brother some respect on this show. The man is righting the ship. You know, it hasn't been any noise outside of AB. You know, 100 miles per hour, and that came and went. You know,
what if he gonna get? All right, so we gonna give out props to brothers in the league. Uh-oh. What about the boy Marvin Lewis giving Hugh Jackson a pay stub?
Salute, salute,
pay
man.
It for it, pay it for it. Keep getting that's them all checks. I'm saying, pay it for it. Hey, that's what I'm about.
Yeah, they
pay it for it, yeah, baby.
That's good looking out, man.
We don't even know his job title.
You don't need to know,
man.
He like Tommy from Mario. We don't even know what he doing.
He's just paying
bro,
it for
white
it.
People
that's
do
all
that
he's
stuff
doing.
All
yep.
the time.
Yep.
I warned y'all this was a black show. White people do that shit all the time, man.
Pay
so
it for it, man.
I'm glad he did that, man, because I understand the discord. I understand.
Hugh must have gave him a kidney or something. I don't know. he is loyal to.
Oh, that's your squad, too, man. What
I'm
think
on
about
sabbatical
that?
Right now. They keep.
I mean, I'm just saying though.
I mean, they've been up and down.
He was better with Dalton, right?
Dalton had his MVP caliber
before
he got injured. Yeah, it was with Hugh. I don't know what to say about it this season because AJ's hurt. But I'm interested to see what he's doing. I mean, I like what Bill Lazor has done so far ever since he took over OC, and with Hugh publicly going on multiple platforms talking about, I need to get an OC job so I can, you know, get my credibility back up. I don't know what he's going to do in Cincinnati.
he was like, yo, I want to set the record straight. Like, that shit, when it was him, but it wasn't him. He wanted to make sure that his story was told, which was really weird. You know, normally
he went on a Jay Prince tour.
He sure did.
Every network talking about
he was everywhere.
Let me
man.
Tell you, like
I was like, wow, this is okay. Stand up for your honor. And I'm glad that he got a job because black coaches, especially guys like that, it's hard for them to get another opportunity. It's hard for him to be Pat Schumer, you know, like who has a losing record and they still give him a job. So I'm glad Hugh's going to give him a chance to kind of rebuild himself and rebuild his reputation.
Well, he was almost offered that New York job.
Really?
Before he took the Browns, the Giants were at, interviewing him too. Okay. I think people wonder why he chose the Browns over them.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think it was because he had
off season to go.
Yeah. It's going to be an opening.
Pat's going to be there for another.
You think so?
For at least another two seasons.
Two seasons?
This is his first season. How are you going to judge
he
him off of this?
He might get one. Y'all got rid of that last guy.
We're not even the majority way. We just got to through the halfway point of the season. Like, we still got some games left.
But what looks good?
Hey, they look good last night.
180 yards on 30 attempts.
188.
It don't matter. We a black show, hey, right? It's about.
Did the stars come out yesterday? They came out.
But Odell... And what's his name? The rookie.
Saquon.
They've been balling all year. Well, Odell, obviously. Yeah. But Odell needs a quarterback. Like I could run the perfect route. If you, like last night, he was wide open. Bro, they didn't even cover him.
I was gonna say, did you see that?
And then Odell kept pointing at his chest, like, bro, like you, how? Look. If this is a rookie quarterback or he dropped a second one too, year though. Quarterback,
he dropped. How one. Do you not call an audible when exactly. the man's uncovered?
Bro? Exactly. Right. Look. And we talking Eli. We're not talking first, second year quarterback. That oh, you know, Mitch Trubisky. You know, what I'm saying these young guys out here. We're talking Eli Super Bowl winning Manning. Bruh, yeah. You supposed to make that auto. All the top flight quarterbacks in this league would have been like, damn, y'all messing up?
Josh Allen would have did that.
They might have called a run play, and guess what the quarterback would have still did? Throw the dang ball. Like, come on, man. Come on, man. What looks good? Like, see, and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just an extension of what the coaching staff is doing out there. And that's why I say, I don't know if he's going to make it this year.
He'll make it. They'll give
if
him
you,
another
okay.
Year.
Again, I'm not trying to cape for Eli Manning. If they when they move on with him, which I hope is after this season, I'm should've fine with that.
Should have been this season.
It should have. Yep. It could have been. It could have been this season.
I'm saying it could have been.
I said it could have been this season, but Saquon was right there, and Baker was gone.
What quarterbacks is coming out this year?
We can get Drew Locke. We can get Herbert.
Locke.
I like Drew Locke a lot though.
They better try to trade for Derek Carr. That's what they better do.
Hey, Jameis. When Mitch came out, nobody said anything about him. I'm not even going to speak on that.
why you ain't going to speak on that?
Because, bro, we don't need him.
What happened with Fitzmagic, though?
Hey.
Oh, you mean Fitzpatrick? The magic is gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying to him. He called him Fitzmagic. Like, what happened with that?
As an aside.
When the curtain calls, the curtain calls.
I just got to say, everybody that cape for Fitzpatrick to get back in there, oh, an apology to Black America.
Yes. Well, an apology.
He threw a lot of yards, though. He
3 points? Come on.
Some of that was on the kicker.
Cut this man,
some
Michael. What are you talking about?
Didn't he have 4 interceptions, too?
3 turnovers, bro.
3 turnovers. A fumble and 2 picks.
A fumble and 2 picks. Yeah. I think an interception on the first try.
Yardage don't mean nothing. I don't care how. You can throw for 500 yards. If you turn over the ball, that's bad.
No, but here's the thing. If you have 3 turnovers and put up 28 points, it don't matter.
Right. A little, yeah.
You gave three points?
Yeah.
Three. Mr. Disrespect. That was very disrespectful.
I can't defend. I'm not defending it.
Everybody gone, bro.
It's a dumpster fire in Tampa Bay.
Oh, Cutter's gone. It's a wrap.
They didn't get rid of the whole roster. Damn
because
it.
You know what he should have did? He should have just let Fitz stay in there. Just let him stay in there. I understand the move, and I was capable for the move, and he should have done it. But, and we all know hindsight is 50-50, bro. 2020, like, you're coaching for your job, bro. And
he knew he lost his job when Jameis couldn't do it.
But he put
because then you say, like, his whole point of becoming head coach was because he's a Jameis whisperer.
And he hasn't done the job with Jameis. But I guess he had to – and it also depends on what the organization wanted. So the owners may have said, put Jameis out there, we need to see. And then he probably got to a point where it was like, Jameis just ain't ready because he missed all these games or whatever. I don't know what's going on with him. He got the faults right now. He's in his head. So we need to bench him. And then you put Fitz out there, and you already saw Fitz was losing it because he almost came back in a situation. Was it you that said that? When there's no pressure on Fitzpatrick, he can go out there and just sling it?
Yeah.
And he looks great. But as soon as there are expectations – it's a wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started to flip-flop again. It's like, bro, if I'm Jameis, nah, bro, you got it. You got it.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to put him in regardless.
He can't put him in now, well, but he thought about it.
Yeah, but the management, as soon as he thought about it, they called him right up, like, don't put him in.
Because of the injury thing.
If he get hurt, we
but I'm just saying, like, everybody that came at me on Twitter, I need y'all to come at me now. And I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the season. He may go back to whatever.
What if he went out for movie?
He could win out. But I'm just saying, y'all came at my neck on Twitter when Jameis was struggling, and nobody has mentioned me
now. Well, two things can be true. Fitzpatrick can be a bad quarterback, and so can Jameis.
That's not what we're talking about. Jameis is not a bad quarterback, bro.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean could be true? Me and Ken sat here weeks prior and tried to explain to you that a journeyman quarterback is not better than a top five NFL quarterback pick.
What I'm saying could be true is that Jameis is y'all give Jameis the benefit about the doubt as far as him.
All
being
we
young,
said, no. Let's clarify statements right now today. What me and Ken both said, and I'm speaking for Ken. Ken can speak for himself too if I'm off. But we both said that Winston is better than Fitzpatrick or Fitzmagic. He is the franchise quarterback there. He is the better of the two. And you were over here talking about that Fitzmagic is the guy and he should start the whole season. And we don't even know if Jameis should be there. Are you like, Ken, am I wrong?
Nah, we knew. Okay. Our whole thing was we knew what Fitzpatrick was. Why even entertain this?
I would say, what's the difference? What's the difference, basically?
The difference is
because Cutter they both throw interceptions. They both lose games horribly.
One
throws more yards than the other.
You know what the difference is? One hit the ceiling, and the other one can still get better.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I said two things could be true.
No. Because
Jameis has a longer shelf life in the NFL than Fitzpatrick at this point of their careers. Because Fitzpatrick's probably going to be out the NFL in probably 2 or 3 years.
Why are you so generous right now?
I'm just because quarterbacks, especially this age, Breeze is playing until he's 40s.
Well, yeah, but
those guys, okay, we know.
They just cut Peterman.
But in terms of Drew Brees.
Yeah, they cut him.
Yeah, they did. They waved. In terms of Drew Brees and Tom Brady's of the world, these guys are the top of the top. You know what I'm saying? They could play. As long as they could throw it, they could play. Just like Peyton Manning. When did Peyton Manning retire? When he couldn't throw it no more. Right? Eli Tom looking Brady. Like he can't throw it no more.
Tom Brady getting there too.
With Tom Brady is when you get pressure on him. Is when you get pressure, he looks regular.
There was a throw that he made was
But at the end of the day, right, like what me and Ken were trying to explain to you, and I think sometimes when we try to explain windows and opportunities, you just, I don't know, you be in a fog or you just super hard-headed and maybe it's just the way that you see things. But when you have a journeyman quarterback, he's hit his ceiling. Fitzpatrick is as good as he's going to get. We have not seen the best of Jameis. Yet. So I don't understand the logic that you brought to the table talking about I would start Fitzmagic or Fitzpatrick or whatever the hell have you over Jameis when Jameis maybe in the first 3 weeks he looks worse than Fitzpatrick. But guess what? By the end of the season, I all but guarantee you he will look the same or better.
You said that. You said that it will come up. The train will stop eventually. I said keep running on the train until it stops. So when it did, they put Jameis in. And the train didn't move anyway. Like, the conductor was still out. Like, he didn't move the needle. With the whole situation with his contract, they saying it's better that we put him on the bench than leave him out there, because if he gets hurt, then not only do we have to pay this man, but it also holds up a bunch of other stuff that we're trying to do if we're trying to move on for real.
It looked bad. It didn't get any better. Cutter looks terrible right now because, you know, he put that man in obviously trying to save his job, when I think that at some point Jameis would have gotten back into football rhythm. And the whole thing was like, and we kept saying, we know what Fitzpatrick is. Like, at some point, he's going to come back down to earth. And he has. And now Cutter is stuck with him, man. He's as good as gone. And the whole thing was, you know, to kind of address what you were saying earlier, like Cutter, and what I was saying was Cutter's job was to fix Jameis, or not even fix Jameis, develop Jameis. And he hasn't done that. And if Jameis was struggling in those three games like he was, that's Cutter's job to coach him out of that funk. And he didn't. He went back to the safe option that did nothing for him but cost him his job, and he gone.
How many coaches has Jameis been under?
Two.
Just two?
They fired Lovie Smith.
Was he drafted under Lovie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They fired Lovie Smith, and then they kept Cutter because of the so-called relationship they had. And they started winning games under Jameis Winston. With Jameis under Lovie. And Jameis was much like Embiid. It was like, man, yo. Like, he was calling people out as a rookie. It was like, they didn't want it. Like, we could have made the playoffs. And they lost, like, two games straight or whatever. And then they got rid of Lovie Smith. And I said it before on this podcast. I said it again. Sometimes you just need black men, to talk to other black men. And
he should have stayed. I just think that with the whole situation in Tampa, there's no light at the end of the tunnel for this season. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's a wash. It's a dumpster fire. Just restart everything.
Everybody that was coming at me on Twitter, I need y'all to come at me.
They were justified.
No, they were not.
They were justified.
No,
you were trying to cape for Jameis.
They were in the heat of the moment. And okay,
is he a good quarterback?
You know what?
Is he a good quarterback?
Yes, Jameis, absolutely. Yes. Here's the thing.
Are you serious?
This is what FIFA
middle of the road.
This is what FIFA was just telling you. To them, and to you, it feels like they were justified because Jameis was playing bad and they couldn't see past the now. But what we were saying, what I was saying was that shit is not real, what Fitz was doing. And that at some point, you're going to have to answer that.
Well, you have a bias against white quarterbacks. So let's just leave that. Whoa.
Because
there's too many white quarterbacks in the league.
When it comes to black quarterbacks and white quarterbacks, you know what Ken's side is on. And two, I've seen enough tape of Jameis.
Ken ain't off his rocker to say that Jameis is better than Aaron Rodgers.
And I was very critical of Russell Westbrook on this show. Russell Wilson on the show before I came on board.
Yeah, because you think he a cornball brother. But I'm just saying, I've had enough tape of Jameis to know what he is. Like, you've always said three seasons. That's why I'm going with your logic. You've always said three seasons.
That was basketball.
Basketball is different.
It's not the same with a quarterback?
No, basketball.
Well, how long
different.
For a quarterback?
Quarterback, I feel that there's more nuance. And I think quarterback is by far the hardest position in sports.
And coaching is extremely important.
Exactly. So in basketball, even if you have a crap coach, guess who you playing against every day, right? Like, you're playing against the best. Just by playing, you're going to get better. Even if you don't have the best coaching staff, even if they don't develop you the best, you will be a better player in 3 to 5 years regardless. It's not the same in football, especially at the quarterback position. I feel in the quarterback position, if it's not the head coach, if it's not your offensive coordinator, it needs to be the quarterback coach. But you need somebody there that speaks quarterback language and understands quarterback psyche.
But have you not also stated before that some quarterbacks just don't get that ever in their career?
Some don't. And most of the ones that don't pan out.
But exactly. The things that we've heard about.
But that's facts, though. That is not. There's no. If you have sympathy for them, then that's on you. But that's facts. Like, it just didn't pan out. Your career is what it is. Like an Archie Manning. Like, okay, he could have done something, but his career was what it was.
He's known as a loser. But however, if we're just looking, right, like the way my brain works, right, when I'm analyzing players and stuff, I look at them like 2K or Madden. You know what I'm saying? These are the attributes. How many bars inside of them attributes do you feel? And when I look at, when I compare Jameis to Fitzpatrick, Jameis feels more bars. He is better right now. And he still hasn't scratched his ceiling.
But how many years are you going to put, how much money and how many years are you going to put on Jameis to get to where you think he can be to before you say, like, it's just too much. Like, I don't have the time.
In terms of the ownership, right, Jameis been in the league 3 years now, right?
I thought this was his fourth year.
This is his fourth. He's going on his fifth year.
So he's been 3 years under Cutter?
Yeah. He played one under Lovey.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, three under Cutter.
Okay. So as an owner.
This was his first year regressing.
Yes. So as an owner, right, they already made the move that they thought they had to make sure he progresses, right? And in the first 3 years, he progressed. Mm-hmm. This year, he was out of the beginning of the season.
Due to
off-the-field issues. Came back, and we all know how hard that is, right? Especially when another quarterback has the mojo going. Let's be honest, he had the mojo going. But is he a better player? No. And as soon as Jameis was available, what did me and Ken say?
Put him back in.
Because who's the starting quarterback of this franchise?
Jameis Winston.
And who's the future of this franchise?
Jameis Winston.
And what are you doing by playing Fitzpatrick?
You telling Jameis Winston he's not the franchise?
You're stunning his growth.
Yeah. So then why did they take him out? That's my question. Why
he looked bad. And everybody knows that he looked bad. But at the end of the day, you go down with the captain of the ship, and he's the captain of the ship.
So you're blaming the organization more than him.
What I'm saying, yes, in this scenario, right, what's happening this particular season, yes, not the organization. I'm blaming the coaching staff. Because if you know that Jameis is your guy for the future, and like, quarterbacks and head coaches kind of tie their careers together, or GM sometimes, right, depending on who drafted who, who's here when, who's there, right? And Jameis and Cutter are tied together. And Cutter, trying to save his job and get more wins, mm-hmm, right, went back to the guy. That's not the long-term plan.
I'll give you another example. They kept Bob McAdoo over Tom Coughlin because of Bob McAdoo's relationship with Eli. Do I have that right?
Well, Eli had like one of his best seasons under McAdoo.
Yeah, under McAdoo. They kept him with that. And Eli, did that work out?
Well, I mean, the first season it did. But the second season, obviously, they ended up with a horrible record, number two in the pick.
So at the end of the day, to me, right, and in the Tampa Bay scenario, as soon as Jameis was available, you go to Jameis and say, Fitzpatrick, look, it's going to be a long season because you ain't seeing this field no more. It doesn't matter. And I understand Jameis threw the four picks?
Yeah, he had a bad
for that game. Okay, fine. You bench him for the rest of the half, but you stick to Jameis. You don't go back because now you can't go back to Jameis.
You can't.
And now Jameis has missed basically an entire year of development.
But he was already on his he was already in his fourth year. He was taken out of the starting lineup because of his mistakes. It's not because of injury or anything else. So he's put himself back for not only mentally but also, like you said, physically, with him understanding the game, getting back into NFL shape, and then throwing those four picks against the Cincinnati defense that gave up 50 to the Saints.
But Fitzpatrick,
when the Bucks have almost similar weapons as far as like a arsenal, like I don't understand how you guys can keep defending him. Like, how many more years does it take for you to say this is his ceiling?
No,
this may be what Jameis Winston is. This is the quarterback he is.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying that his ceiling is Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's going to be the best of the best. But what I'm saying is he's better than a journeyman quarterback. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that he's – if he develops fully, he is top – 10 and to top 15 quarterback.
Would you say he's better? Jameis Winston is better than Andy Dalton
today, right now?
Yes.
No.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. Andy Dalton. Okay. A lot of people say Andy Dalton's not a franchise quarterback,
but he can be better than Andy Dalton.
Exactly. He can be better. This is where I get frustrated with you,
because
you're saying
could, maybe, possibly.
But do you understand that that's part of sports? The future is a big part of sports, and unless you can analyze and properly predict where a player can wind up, that's how GMs get hired and fired, bruh. You have to be able to accurately predict. You know what I'm saying? If you think he's going to be Aaron Rodgers, but he falls to be Russell Wilson, oh, you a damn good GM. But if you say that this guy's going to be Aaron Rodgers and he's Andy Dalton, that's a damn problem.
And what was Jameis' expectation when he came in out of the draft? What would you say he was going to be?
Top 10 quarterback.
No, I mean, like, what kind of caliber quarterback?
Top 10. I think people
IQ
that saw
was
him
off the charts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like, then
he had the moxie. He won a national championship.
He was a leader.
So if you expect him to be a top 10 quarterback once he figured it all out, and now he's not even as good as Andy Dalton, then what does that say as a GM?
I'm saying that this year. What happened? Obviously, what happened off the field is unfortunate. It cost them some games. Cool, fine, whatever. Granted, that's why you picked up a Fitzpatrick, because you knew that the first 3-4 games he wasn't going to be there. However, as a coaching staff, the same way that they're treating Eli and they ain't pulling him, right? The same way that they were wishy-washy last year in terms of pulling him, and he ain't played like damn near just a half or just a game, and he came right back. That's what you do, because that's your franchise guy. And you go down with the ship with your franchise guy.
Is Jameis Winston the future of the Tampa Bay Bucks? Is he the future?
Because
will they keep him?
Because of what happened this year, and we don't know what's going to happen with Cutter, we don't know. The fact that they're not playing him right now, we don't know. But he should have been. He should have been in there, because at the end of the day, he's still a young player, yes or no?
He is. That's why he's still young.
So with young players, do they not have to go through their lumps, even though it may take them a little bit longer than some other young players? It is what it is. It comes with the territory.
But how long? Like, tell me the timetable. Like, what year do you say, okay, this is who he is?
I think you can make that. I think the Tampa Bay organization can make that decision next year. And in the last year of his contract, I think the ownership would have preferred for Jameis to stay in there. I'm pretty sure.
Do you think they draft a quarterback in this upcoming draft?
Nope. Because there's not one better than Jameis coming in.
There, right.
Where they can draft.
Right. There's a mock draft that has them taking a quarterback next year. And I think it was a guy. Because
they'll be a top 10 pick.
From Duke or something like that. But, and I got to watch him play, but I don't think he's going to be better than Jameis, bro.
Here's the thing. Even if it's a top 10 pick, because obviously they're not going to make the playoffs, whoever they select at top 10, they're still not going to be better than Jameis. Also, if you draft a quarterback in the second, third, fourth round in this draft, I don't think that you're going to get somebody to come in to outplay Jameis. You're just not.
CBS has Tampa Bay, as of today, taking Justin Herbert out of Oregon.
So, come on. No.
I mean, I don't really care
for Oregon quarterbacks.
Right, so good luck with that. So,
I'm just saying, I think they've made their clear-cut decision.
Like, I think Cutter made a decision.
I think the organization said, hey, we've seen enough. We've stood by Jameis. By Jameis long enough.
You don't give up on young players.
Well, they clearly are.
The same way that the Browns didn't give up on Josh Gordon, you don't give up on young players.
But sometimes, like you said, like you might need a new change of scene. You overstayed your welcome here.
And here's the thing. That's something for the organization to decide, right? We don't know that. To me, today, he's still better than Fitzpatrick. The only reason why he's not saying much, though. For you, it was a lot.
When Fitzpatrick was hot, then I was like, yeah, stay with the hot hand. That's what you do, because Jameis has never shown me he was ever this hot, this consistent. And then when he came out, like you guys said, he's the franchise. So regardless of how hot Fitzpatrick is, we know he's going to come down. So might as well put the young boy back in, because he's the franchise QB. He came back in, stunk it up. They pulled him out, and now Fitz is back in. So, like, to me, the organization has made their decision. They've seen enough. They have the most information more than anyone in this room.
The organization didn't make that decision, bro.
Who made the decision?
Cutter. That's all Cutter, man.
You don't think the organization is backing him?
Nope. I think they're hands off, but that's Cutter.
We've seen organizations put their foot down when they want to.
Of course, but have you heard any rumblings? I haven't heard no rumblings. And typically, rumblings like that get heard.
Because right now, I told Manny from the Technical File podcast, cause we were talking about Bowles, and I said, now that they've drafted Sam Darnold, their franchise guy, I said, watch the headlines, because the headlines will tell the story. Who are they going to blame for the failings of that quarterback? And it's all on Bowles right now for Sam Darnold playing like a rookie as expected. Mm-hmm. Same thing that Hugh Jackson got the blame, you know, and they pulled the trigger because of the discord and Ty Haley and Hugh and part of that. But they felt like, you know, Mayfield wasn't development. You know, same reason they allegedly said they got rid of Lovie Smith, because they wanted to make sure that Jameis would develop. And Cutter hasn't done the job. Hugh didn't do the job. Bowles ain't doing the job. They talking about getting rid of the guy at Wilkes because he's not doing the job. Look at Trubisky. We all said Trubisky was going to – well, yeah, if I remember correctly, we weren't high on Trubisky.
I said give him a year.
He was.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because he just came into the league, last year?
Last year, but he didn't look good at all.
He didn't look good at all. But, like, Goff, I was surprised you didn't say, like, treat him like Goff. Give him another year.
Nah, because, with Goff, I saw it from day one. Like, the moment I saw the man throw a ball, I said, oh, that's the guy. When I saw Trubisky, I'm like, damn, he looked like a doofus out there.
But this goes to show you.
Coaching. Matt Nagy came in there, and Matt came in there, and that boy out there slanging that rock.
400 yards.
Like, it's. I thought it was a fluke.
Yep. And here's the thing. I'm not saying that Trubisky's the next great thing, but I think the coaching staff has got him to a place where now he's not the reason why you lose.
They're taking advantage of what he does.
He's comfortable.
And then here's the thing now. This is second year, right? First year, full-time start. Did he start his rookie year? He did, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, and he looked awful.
At least he started halfway.
This year, he looks better, right?
He looks great.
Okay. He looks better than last.
Yes.
Definitely. Right? That's all I'm saying. Next year is the true test. And the reason why I say that is because, in the great words of BZ430, they're going to have that film on him, and we're going to see how he's going to adjust. Because now the offensive coaching staff and the development of Mitch Trubisky, they know how they want to attack defenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they got film on that.
Yeah.
Right? So now we're going to see how he's going to be able to overcome when they scheme directly for him. Because I don't think that defense, and maybe now they will, but I don't think for the last maybe 2-3 weeks they really, you know, took him seriously the same way me and Ken didn't take him seriously. And now he's putting up numbers and they're winning, and he's not the reason why they're losing. We'll see how he takes schemes. And then, did you guys talk basketball yet?
Not yet.
Not for you. I want to read you this. This is from the pewterreport.com. This is where, you know, anyway, I'll read it to you. He said, the entire reason Cutter was hired was because Tampa Bay thought they would lose him to another team in the offseason, and they cover the Bucs, by the way, for all of you guys out there listening. This is what they do. they wanted to keep consistency with him and Winston as Winston progressed from his rookie season. He says, I don't know if Cutter ever really believed in Winston or what, but it's clear now that Winston was not his choice. If he was, he'll be his guy right now, even in the struggles. And he said, this Monday, Cutter made it loud and clear that he's had enough. He made it clear that if this is it, if he's going down, then damn it, he's going to do it his way. Long term, there's no reason for Winston to not be the starting quarterback this Sunday in New York. There's no excuse for it. Absolutely, it makes absolutely no sense for a team that is all but mathematically eliminated from playoff contention to keep playing a 35-year-old quarterback when the 24-year-old franchise hopeful, keyword, sits on the bench. Like that's it right there.
I'm saying because of that, the organization has to be like, okay, this is fine.
No, CC. You.
I heard what you said, but I'm just saying, like, a coach like that, like, an organization would not, like you said, Fivo, you don't throw away young talent like that. So just to leave him on the side, like, an organization would have to step in like they did in New York with the Giants when they were a much stronger franchise. I understand, but they still own the team. They still write the checks for everybody in that building. So they can make when they make a decision. It's by law.
It's what we were saying, and I'm
no coach has that much power over an organization outside of Belichick.
I think most managers tend to let their people do their job, and if Cutter feels like whatever, then they're gonna let him do it because they've already made their decision. The decision is not Jameis. The decision is Cutter. And they were like, okay, all right, fine. You want to play Winston because you think that's going to save your job? Cool. But you want to save your job, you probably should have had Winston playing and show me what you could do in Winston. Because right now, this is my guy, and you've proven that you can't handle the job. Like, there's no reason.
They might just part with both of them.
Nah. I think they'll bring in another coach and give him one more shot. But I think I agree. Like, why are you playing a 35-year-old coach, a 35-year-old quarterback? Like, it makes no sense. You need to know what Jameis – well, I don't know. We're arguing in circles. But either way, what else I got over here, man? Shout out to Anthony Lynn, the brother in L.A. I still don't fully believe in the Chargers, but hey, man, you 7-2, man. Anthony Lynn, so good job, brother. Todd Bowles. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah,
you don't have the weapons.
I think his time is up. Probably. But
yeah, it's done. It's done.
They already didn't they have like a hashtag? What was it Jets? I forgot what was it Jets started, done or something like that.
You can't get blown out by the Bills like that, man.
Nah, the players don't quit. They talking
and
about.
And they were at home too, wasn't they?
Yeah, shoot. Matt Barkley off the street.
Right
now, I know Josh Going McCown. Yeah. But it's a wrap. I've been I just go on Bleacher Report and just kind of go through,
and just read the headlines.
And I'm like, damn. I was just seeing it just start to get worse.
Do you think he lands somewhere else?
The brother can coach. I don't think he's had a lot of talent, you know.
Knowing the NFL, you know how they do brother coaches, but, man. He probably won't.
Nah, but he can coach, man. He won with garbage, you know. He won with Fitzpatrick. When Cutter came in with Fitzpatrick, you know, but Fitzpatrick did what he did.
If they fire Harbaugh in Baltimore, I would love to see.
That Bowles. Is interesting that they're talking about moving on from him. That's another one I called. I told people Flacco wasn't good, but they jumped on me about that too. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that they're about to give Lamar Jackson his shot. So we'll see. I know I believe in Lamar, but he ain't ready yet.
No, he's not. I just want to.
You think he should be thrown out to the Wolves?
I don't know if it's the Wolves, though.
NFL professional football is the Wolves.
Because, like, but that's, like, making it seem like he's, like, Mowgli. And, like, you know.
I think he needs another, like, season behind that clipboard, holding the clipboard, I think.
I think I just want to see what he got. I mean, everybody else throwing out these other rookies and stuff. I want to see what he can do because he has weapons. He has a good O-line. He has a good defense. So, like, he has a lot of pieces that he should be able to be at least competent. That's all I want to see. I just want to see if he's competent. If he's competent, then we can build off of that later.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I
think. And nobody's expecting much because, like, this.
Right.
Baltimore's not mathematically out, but they're basically out.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people were talking, you know, Cash about Lamar Jackson saying he's not ready. He didn't look ready at all. I think he had a good game his last game in preseason, and he's looked okay in spots during the season. But you know you're going to move on from Flacco. You drafted him, so you need to know, is he going to be a backup?
They pay so much money to Flacco.
Bro.
Was that Super Bowl worth that money?
Damn right. It's a Super Bowl. How many franchises don't have a Super Bowl?
That's what I was going to say. I think if you were to say, all right, you just got to pay $125 million for this one Super Bowl, I'm taking it.
Yep. And that was their second Super Bowl, too, the franchise second Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently so, man. Apparently so. I think they thought they could ride that wave. But
here's the thing about Lamar Jackson. I think he's talented. I think he is a football player. I think he is a quarterback in this league. I think it's Tebow-esque in terms of his vision, in terms of dissecting the field, right? And this is why I say that quarterbacking in the NFL is by far the hardest position in sports, because you have DBs that are trying to stop your pass from getting somewhere, right? You have linebackers that are taking away the intermediate or blitzing you, coming at you full speed. A lot of these guys run 4.4, 4.5, 4.6, and you're talking about 250-pound grown-ass men. Then you have 300-and-some-pound guys that run 4.8 to 5 flat coming straight after you. And then you're taught to not look at none of that and look downfield, you know what I'm saying, go from your progression from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. Lamar Jackson can barely go 1 to 2, right? Because what is he? He's a scrambling quarterback. He got happy feet. As soon as he see one of them big 350-pound dudes in his face, guess what he's going to do? He's going to try to run. Mm-hmm. And what I saw in preseason is the reason why I wouldn't play him. Now, can he get a couple of special packages like they have? Of course. You know, put him out there wide out, run the wildcat, do other different things. Of course, because he's that talented as an athlete, right? However, as a quarterback, When I seen him in preseason, he can't turn the corner against these guys, against NFL talent, against NFL speed.
That's the funny part.
You know what I'm saying? Because he was running away from everybody in college.
Yep.
But in the NFL, in preseason, going against the twos and the threes, he couldn't turn the corner. What do you think he's going to do against Von Miller? What do you think he's going to do against all of these elite defensive talent out here, the real number one? Nah, man, he's not ready. He's just not ready.
I just think you have, like, he's the team he has now as far as a quarterback being drafted in the first round. There's not that many other teams that are other quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks, are going into a situation like that. You know what I mean? Like, Sam Darnold, he's in a situation, like, he has a horrible team around him. Josh Rosen, same thing. Josh Allen, obviously. So it was like, for what he has, if he can't even show you that, can he win you a game? Can he look decent? Want to see what you have.
But here's the thing, though. I think that in this year, that would be unfair to ask of him, because at the end of the day, we are in a passing era, right?
Yes.
And you draft a quarterback that right now can't pass? Like, how are you going to win games? Because he ain't Michael Vick fast. Like, Michael Vick wasn't ready to play, right? Like, he sat a year, didn't he? Or they tried to sit him, and then he came in like halfway through the season.
Think something happened like that.
But Lamar ain't got that arm. Half of the quarterbacks in this NFL ain't got that arm.
I think you're being very negative on what he's capable of. I think there's a reason why a lot of scouts were looking at him as a first round talent. You know what I mean?
Receiver.
I think that's just disrespecting him.
That is disrespectful.
I do too. I'm not saying that. I was very insulted.
Well, because I know this may be optimistic, but I'm looking at it like a Cam situation. Like, you may you may need like a North Turner type of coach.
Cam,
to be
Cam paired came
with him.
In his very first game and threw damn near 400 yards against that Arizona team, because I remember watching that.
No, but I mean, like, but obviously he was the guy from day one.
But my point, and maybe this just didn't stick out enough. Marcus Mariota is a better passer than Lamar Jackson. Every quarterback in the league right now, right? I would say about 90% of them, because I know there's some bums out there we don't even know their name. But 90% of the guys can throw better than Lamar in a pro-style offense. And to me, if you can't throw, and you're not Michael Vick fast. If you were Michael Vick fast, I mean, I'd put him out there.
But you know what? Here's the thing. Who Ozzie Newsom drafted Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah, he's on his way.
Yeah, good. He's. I think he's gone.
Yeah, this is last year.
Yeah. Ozzie Newsom. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a, you know, you think that was, brother. Yeah,
was,
you know,
was that a revolutionary
thing?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that was a
pro brother move.
And then let's just think about Ozzie Newsom's entire career. Like, he's been one of the better GMs that we don't talk about, right?
True.
And he's drafted a lot of talent. And I think this will be his farewell gift, because I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson can't play, and I think Lamar Jackson,
you're just saying he's not ready.
He's just not ready.
No, I.
But what happened to the whole, like, throw the rookie in there and let him get his lumps? You know, all that?
When you see some of that in college, we saw Baker Mayfield be extremely accurate and go through progressions, and he had all that moxie and everything that some people like, some people hate it, but I like it. You know, we've seen a lot of these guys. Andrew Luck, when he came out of Stanford, progression. And who was his coach? Harbaugh. Yeah, the brother, not the one from the Ravens, but the one that's in Michigan now. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've seen certain things that now when you get into the pro level, you're like, okay, we can expound on that. We can develop that. We've seen glimpses of this talent, and now we can build on that. What have we seen from Lamar Jackson as a thrower?
Yeah, and that's the thing that concerns me.
But as a Heisman, again, I know the Heisman Trophy it's a hit or miss when it comes to transitioning to the NFL, but we've seen he's proven that he is far, like, he was the cream of the crop in college, right? As a NFL,
Tim Tebow,
he did the
he's not
first
Tim Tebow
year.
That's disrespectful.
No, I'm not calling him Tim Tebow, but Tim Tebow won the Heisman, right? And Tim Tebow was arguably the best college football player, wasn't he? Like, that man was polarizing.
Yeah, but
when that man said we gonna win, they won.
Yeah, but we don't question the same thing about Lamar Jackson as we do with Tim Tebow.
I think
he's a lot better thrower. I think he's a better athlete, and I think he
Lamar Jackson better.
Yeah. So, and I think he's more competent than what people are giving him credit
for.
I have to believe that if a GM like Ozzie Newsom, if you said who's one of the underrated GMs throughout his tenure, if he drafted him, he drafted him for a reason.
I thought that they were just being disrespectful to Lamar Jackson because they wanted him to play receiver. And then I saw him play in preseason, and he didn't look ready. The first year he played in college,
Most of those rookies don't look ready in preseason.
Some of them did. Sam Darnold did. Baker Mayfield looked better. Like, a lot of them looked better than Lamar Jackson did. So everything that I was hearing or that was being reported was true. He got better, but he just didn't look ready. He looked like he was about a year or two away. But I'm with you. The talent, the ability is there. It just needs to be developed for the NFL speed, for the NFL level. In his first year in college, he lit it up. I mean, he was running, throwing. He was accurate. He looked great. Second year, he came down. And he didn't. And that's when people started to question his ability to play in the NFL. They tend to do that in the second year. They did it to Jameis. They did it to Cam. I think he played 2 years, right? Or was he a transfer? And they tend to start to nitpick a little bit more about the college quarterbacks, especially when you're black, before you come into the NFL. But then it kind of proved that they were right. But I'm with you. I would like to see him play just to see how much development does he actually need.
And next year, if they're going to clean house – from the coaching staff and even up to the GM, they need to look at a coordinator who knows how to coach quarterbacks like him.
Is he going to be the next guy after Flacco?
Let's play a game.
Flacco gone, bro. You need to know.
No, 1,000%. But I don't think that you need to know what Lamar Jackson is today once you get rid of Flacco, because Flacco's not coming back. He's gone. And so is the brother Harbaugh. He gone too. That whole coaching staff is gone. They're going to revamp. They're going to start anew. Newsom's gone. It's going to be a brand new era. And I believe Lamar Jackson will be the starting quarterback next year. I think that as the organization, as the ownership, you have to bring in a head coach or offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach that understands how to build up a running, throwing quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that looks to run before he looks to throw. I just think that's naturally what he is. But this lends me to, let's play a real quick game. Just give me the first thing, all three of you guys, the first thing that comes to your mind when I give you this player's name. Drew Brees.
Accurate.
I was accurate.
Oh, you got to give me another one. He's accurate.
Underappreciated.
Okay. Damn, it's a disrespect.
They already said the top two.
You throw MVP.
He's an arm. He has a great arm.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Aaron Rodgers.
One word you said?
One word or a little phrase.
Special.
Thank you, Ken.
Yeah. Zips on his passes.
Boom.
If phrase can make something out of nothing.
All right. Mahomes.
Mahomes, he seems like he's special.
Okay.
Say that.
Moxie.
Yeah, gunslinger.
Okay. Let me think of another quarterback. Jimmy G.
Overrated.
Okay.
Still haven't figured him out yet.
Okay.
Freaky.
I knew you.
I know why you said that. Tom Brady.
The GOAT.
Okay.
White supremacy.
See, I told you he don't care for white quarterbacks. I told you.
Ice cold in his veins.
Lamar Jackson.
Fast as hell. What?
We going to use all the black stereotypes to describe
him. I mean, he is.
He is fast.
He is fast. Kid, why you laughing, man?
What you got, Mr. Disrespect?
I think I would say he's underappreciated. Or what's the word where you counted out for no reason? That's what I think.
Okay,
mobile,
mobile. So two out of the three things that we said about Lamar Jackson had nothing to do about his arm. And the reason why I wanted to play this little game is because, in the way I evaluate players, there's always some. What's the engine behind what makes this player great, right? What's Lamar's engine? It's his feet. It ain't his arm. It ain't his arm. And the arm and the brain, the IQ, the everything that comes about being an NFL quarterback, that part of it isn't there yet.
Did he not throw in the combine? Did he?
I don't know.
No, he didn't run. He didn't run. That's what he did.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think he did. I knew he did something.
Yeah, he did throwing. He did throwing drills.
He definitely did throwing drills.
Yeah. Never mind.
And again, I don't want it to sound like I'm not saying that Lamar can't ball. Lamar ain't going to ball. I think he is the future of Baltimore.
Just saying not now.
Yeah, just not this
season. You don't start him at all this season?
No. Well,
Even the last four games, that don't mean nothing?
Yeah, I'll probably put him in the last three to four games.
That's all I'm asking. I just want to see what he can
do. No, I feel you. I think it's a mistake to put him in right now. I think it was a mistake to start him at the beginning of the season. I think that in the last 3 to 4 games, there's no harm, no foul.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, you do want to know what you have with him. You know what I'm saying? But I just know that he's not ready to be a contributor this year. Even next year, if they get the right coaching staff, the right players, everything around him, I don't see him soaring. I don't see him like elevating that franchise just yet. But that year after that, his third year in the league, that's when I can see it go. But again, that's a lot of ifs, right? And the if was a fifth, we all be drunk, right, Mr. Disrespect?
Especially the way you talking, right? Yeah.
but we need to see who that coaching staff, who that OC, that
that's key. That's
the head coach or that quarterback coach is going to be. One of those three guys needs to be a Lamar Jackson guy. And if he can get that, and they can get a run game and a dynamic receiver out there, that's going to be a problem.
All right. It's time to unbury the lead. What y'all want to start with, man?
Oh, I already know where I want to go.
Let's go.
Philly?
You know, you were talking about the light at the end of the tunnel in basketball. Has your boy Melo seen that light?
Has your boy
seen that light? Because at the beginning, you know what? This is why I love being on a podcast, because I know when I'm right. What did I say at the beginning of the season, Ken?
You said that Melo would probably be traded from Houston, or
he need to retire.
Or yeah.
All right.
Beginning of the season.
I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. Because obviously as far as in Houston, the writing's on the wall. He's already looking at other teams and all that stuff. So all I'm saying is this. Steven Jackson, I'm with you, bro. Like they try to get my boy out for it's a conspiracy.
He is definitely being scapegoated. He is definitely being scapegoated, but he is not the reason why Houston is bad. And I never when I saw the writing on the wall in the off season, right? To me, it had nothing to do with the Rockets and what they were doing. It had everything to do with Melo. I was trying to tell you, he is. I don't want to say he's all the way washed because he can still mop the floor with a lot of guys.
He
in
dropped
the
28 like a few weeks ago.
It was against a whack ass team,
though. Oh, Mr. Disrespect.
I know. It's still professional. Exactly.
It's just, look. I get it. Melo is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Melo is one of the greatest scorers that the game has ever seen. Most versatile scorers that the game has ever seen. Can do it at every level. Could play bully ball, could play finesse, can do whatever he wanted to do out there. But today and tomorrow and for the foreseeable future, he is not a valuable asset, not off the bench. Because, look, you know, when they asked him about coming off the bench at Houston, you know, he said mentally that's something I got to work on. Some guys just ain't built for that. Some guys just, they not built for to come off the bench. Melo's one of those guys. Also, Melo's game is a volume scorer. He's never been efficient in his entire career. How is he going to be more efficient the older he gets? He don't have the same step. He don't have the same moves. He can't get to the same spots. That's why I would say Melo's a bum. Melo's a bum because he's a bum compared to what Melo is. Not compared to the other guys in the NBA. Melo can no longer, just like
D-Wade. Don't say a bum. Just say he's regressed. You don't have to say bum. Like, you bum is not. You can't make bum nice.
Because it ain't nice. But because you
regression.
Know what?
You just say regression. Just say regression.
No, because it's beyond regression. It's beyond regression. Because to me, like, D-Wade is not a bum. And the reason why I say D-Wade is not a bum, we saw in last year's playoff, he turned back the hands of time and he got them a game. And not saying he could do that for obviously an entire playoff series because he can't. He can't do that for an entire regular season because he can't no more. However, he can still do that. I don't see Melo doing it. I see Melo miss clutch free throws in the last 2 years, right, playing with OKC, now with Houston. I seen Melo just not seem like he's in tune with what's going on around him on the basketball court. That's why I'm calling him a bum. Now, he's not a bum for his entire career. And obviously, I'm being a little facetious out here, just throwing out a damn word out there that
you
sounds
mean it.
Provocative.
You mean it, though.
A little bit. He's bumish.
Calling
now.
Me Mr. Disrespect. That's a Hall of Famer you're talking about.
That is.
A brother.
But you
he
know
said
what?
It. You said
but
that.
But at the end of the day, you got to know when the time is the time. And I said it last year. When I saw him at OKC, I said he don't need to play no more. It's a wrap for Melo. Like, what type of value does he bring to any team?
Scoring off the bench.
Man, he don't want to come off the bench.
This is what I think. All right, and obviously I'm a Melo supporter, so I'm just gonna say I think he needs to be with like a great coach. I think that's to me. If you are willing to give Jameis Winston more opportunity, you have to have
see,
the same
is
with
Fitzpatrick.
No, you have to have
the
same leeway with Melo when it comes to.
But that's different.
Melo
is way past his prime. Jameis is not even about to enter his prime. That's a bad example.
But in basketball, basketball life is longer than football life. That's why things, you know, you can get cut in your first year.
He's man in his 16th year.
I'm just saying, if he went to the San Antonio Spurs, if Pop wanted him, if somehow he ended up with the Brad Stevens type of coach or even the guy from Utah.
Brad Stevens got his own trouble.
He do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying, like, with a coach of that caliber, that elk, that's when I'm like, this is a guy who knows how to utilize this player.
Let me tell you this, man. Sometimes not even coaching can fix what's wrong, right?
Yeah.
And what's
16
wrong,
years in. I mean,
what's wrong is 16 years. Father Time is undefeated. Right. He look old, man. Does he not look old to you? Does he look old to y'all?
He
looks
old to me. He washed.
It's sad, you know what I mean? Man.
And it is, because I like Melo. I always thought he was, like people say, one of the most versatile scorers that this game ever had. So
it's time, Nick. I had to do this with Dwayne Wade.
Yep, like 2 years ago almost.
Just enjoying for what play he does.
I put it to you like this. Right. Right. Like a Brad Stevens, a Pop, you know, some of the other Doc Rivers, they could probably wring a little bit more water out that towel. But, bro, you're not getting more than three drops.
No, I'm not saying that he's going to be. I say he can. Right now, I think his ceiling is sixth man of the year.
Hell no. Look, Lou Williams is sixth man of the year.
Right.
I think, hey, come on.
I think I'm hoping Philly Collin is. I feel like
they ain't make, nothing that he they can gave up give a, to Philly.
They gave up a lot to get Jimmy. So no, I they think didn't. They did. Depth wise, they did.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll get into that next. Well, I guess we could jump right into it.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to segue because.
Because here's the thing. Oh, yeah. Right. Like with the fit with that Philly trade, right? And I've been hearing a lot about depth. The more I think about it, the more I like it, right? At first, I liked it, but I didn't love it. I think I'm starting to love it now for both teams. And the reason why I didn't necessarily love it for Philly initially was because you're giving up a starting four that's a real good role player. I call them championship role players. And then Covington is definitely a championship role player. You're talking about first team all defense. She's 40% from three.
He's a good two-way player.
You know what I'm saying?
Like 6'9"?
The definition of a two-way player.
Yeah. 6'7", 6'9", between there. You know, the elite wing size, right? Like, that's what he is.
Yep.
And then you gave up Jared Bayless, which is nothing. A 2022 second-round pick, which is nothing, which is great by Elton Brand.
They could have got something better with Houston. That was just Tibbs.
Minnesota,
being,
you mean?
No, I mean, like, they could have got a better package from Houston.
Four first-round picks is not a better package.
It is when you're talking about longevity, because he's the
But it's not, because what did they give up to get Jimmy?
Covington, Sarek, Bayless.
No. What did Minnesota give up to the Chicago Bulls to get Jimmy Butler?
They gave up Dunn and Zach LaVine, your boy.
What else? A pick that became who?
That's what I've been looking for.
Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, that
was Minnesota's pick. So imagine this Minnesota team with Lauri Markkanen, Kat, LaVine, and Wiggins, and Chris Dunn.
They still be soft.
Okay, that's fine. But that's a lot of talent. That's more talent than what they have now.
You see what LaVine doing now?
No, I mean...
Right. Well, they're like third in the league in score right now. Who'd have thought that?
30-something.
But at the same time, he was with Tibbs and he wasn't doing that. That says more about coaching.
No, because under Thibodeau, but all three, Kat, Wiggins and LaVine, all averaged over 20 points.
Yeah, it was balling under Tibbs.
They all averaged over 20 points before LaVine got hurt. So I don't want to hear that. At the end of the day, what Thibodeau did was expedite the process, right? Because when you build through the draft, at some point in time, right, when you realize how good your young talent is, you need to start infiltrating that roster with veteran talent and superstar or all-star caliber talent to expedite and get these guys to progress, right? What Thibs did is that I think he pulled the trigger too early and possibly on the wrong guys.
Nah.
So what you're telling me
I would have gave up that for Jimmy, to be honest. You wouldn't give up Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn for Jimmy?
Here's the thing. I would have gave up Chris Dunn.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the current trade. I didn't know you were back to Minnesota, Chicago.
The Chicago that got Jimmy there in the first place.
Yeah, no, that was.
Because you always go for the best player, right?
But here's the thing, though. I think that they were too early to start bringing in the veteran talent. You had to cultivate that young talent first and get those guys established before you start meddling and bringing the real guys onto the squad. Look, right? Because the blueprint is Golden State. How long was Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green together before they even signed Iguodala, right? How long were they together before they made the move for KD? Right before they started bringing on the David West and all of that, all of those guys were established. Is Kat established yet?
Nah.
This is supposed to be the year. As names, as household names. Steph and them boys were established as household names because they made it to the playoffs with their drafted big three.
People know Kat, I would say, and people know
Wiggins. People know Embiid. They don't know Kat. Kat can be doing what Embiid is doing just with Kat's skills and abilities. Kat can fucking ball, man.
He's not a household name, though.
But, yeah.
Wiggins is not a household name. LaVine is becoming a household name because he got his own squad now, right? But what I'm saying is, and going back to that trade, is if you look at where Philly is now, right, their two stars, them boys is some dogs, Oh, you could bring the bigger dog that he think he bigger because he not better than them two. But cool. The reason why I really love it for Philly though is because let's say if you had three primetime scorers that need the rock, oh, that's a problem. How are we gonna figure this out? You know, we seen the saga in Miami, we seen it, you know, worked itself out in Boston. You had three scorers that kind of need the ball, right? But here, Ben Simmons don't need the rock. He scored 10, 12 points.
He don't even like to shoot.
He don't want to shoot. All you want to do is be 6'10", defend, and distribute the ball. And B, though, he going to be, you know, 30 points. And now you bring on Jimmy that can go get his own shot. Šarić and Covington weren't those type of guys.
And they didn't seem like they were quite fitting in this year. It was weird.
Philly has lost a lot of good, like, surrounding role players the last couple seasons.
In particular, and Bellinelli were the biggest ones.
Because think about it, right? At any given time, when you have Bellinelli, Ilyasova, and also J.J. Redick on the squad, and Robert Covington, right?
Shooters.
And Dario Saric, all five of those guys are legit three-point shooters. You can put four three-point shooters out there. You can put three three-point shooters out there with your two best guys in Ben Simmons and Embiid. This year they didn't have that. Man. They had two guys that could shoot the three.
Right.
Or three.
Brown had his rotations down pack. Last year.
This year it's a little bit off, you know, out of whack.
That's why Embiid is averaging so many points because he's having to do it all now.
Well, no, that's not why.
Nah. Well, I'm saying that. Well, that's not why, but that's a big reason why you're seeing. I think because he has to pick up the scoring load.
But great players, as they continue to progress, their usage rates goes up.
And who else on that team you're going to get a ball to?
That's going to get you 30.
No, I agree. I'm saying they don't have shooters, so that's why they're doing a lot of inside. And obviously, Ben Simmons, we talk about, don't even shoot.
But Embiid hit a lot of threes this year, and he hit a big three against Charlotte to win the
game. He's their best shooter.
Nah, JJ is. Come on now.
Yeah, how you going to forget J.J. Redick?
You see J.J. put them numbers up last night.
I know. Like, what you talking about? That man was shooting without a shoe on. You know what I'm saying? So look, the thing I like, I think what it does for Philly is it gives another clutch guy in clutch moments because Embiid is clutch, right? Ben Simmons don't want the ball.
Embiid wants to be clutch.
He wants to be clutch. But it takes the heart and the wherewithal to take those shots.
You need to have the will to.
Exactly. And he has the skill to do it.
Yeah, and I feel there were moments Brett Brown should have given him the opportunity last year.
And Joel Embiid has that I don't give a fuckness to him. Mm-hmm. That's like, bro, I don't care. Like, I'm going to shoot this shot, and if we make it cool, mm-hmm. we win. If not, we play tomorrow. Yeah. Right? Like, he has that. You need that to be one of the greats. He has that already. But Jimmy, now it gives you another guy that can create and facilitate. So you literally have Joel and now Jimmy in clutch moments, because before, do you really want to give Ben Simmons the ball? You don't. So I think that elevates them. I think they're also going to add to their roster throughout the buyout market.
They're trying to get Korver.
They're willing to trade for Korver, which is good. But still, we don't know which other veterans are going to get bought out, right? Like a la Tyson Chandler. You know, nobody on Philly got the backroom deals like LeBron do, you know, on the phone like that. But
don't James Jones.
He ain't got no Nobody on Philly got James Jones on speed dial like that.
He called him obsessive. Hey, bro. Look at your hand and says, how many rings did I get?
Right. Uh-huh. But then for Minnesota, I think from mind you, Karl Anthony Towns had a 2020 game the day after they got
rid of. He was playing like garbage with Jimmy. Jimmy was bad.
He was scared.
He was bad for them. But but you know what, though? I think he was bad and good. He was bad while he was there, but it's good that he's gone. But the impressions that he's made is going to be everlasting for them. I think that they kind of needed somebody to whip their ass the way Jimmy kind of did. You know what I'm saying? Now, Cat has had a 2020 game since Jimmy's been gone, and Dario and Robert Covington are going to come in and fall in line.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? Dario's like, hey, bro, you need to take 20, 30 shots. You the guy on this squad.
He's used to playing with a guy like that.
Exactly. Yep. Inside out, pick and roll, can rebound, can be a defensive presence. He hasn't been in the NBA with Cat. I don't know what's going on. But outside of that, now you have Robert Covington. So on the wing, you have really, really exceptional length, because Wiggins is 6'7", 6'8", with some crazy bounce and length. And now you put a first-team all-defender out there with him, too, that can catch and shoot threes. Yep. So I like it. I like it for both teams. You know, outside of the Kawhi, DeMar DeRozan, I don't think you can really get equal value. But I think what this does for both rosters, it puts them where they need to be.
What about Philly's depth? outside of the starting five.
Philly's depth, I'm not worried about it because the way that they need to address their depth is with cheap veterans. Because they have everything that a championship squad needs except for the cheap veterans. You look at every championship squad, they had at least 2 to 3 cheap veterans on that team. And they don't have any yet. And but I
think
they will.
Yeah, and I think their depth will be fine. They still got Winston Chandler. I like what Cormat and Shamet have been able to do when mm-hmm. they've come in. So they look like they can play. We didn't know before because they were not getting minutes. I still believe in Fultz. So I think it'll give him a chance to develop with less pressure.
Nah. So I think what this trade does is make Fultz expendable.
They said they came out and said he wasn't, but I think he is.
No. He 1,000%. See, look, here's the thing. Fultz is extremely fragile.
I don't think he is.
Okay. So Fultz is extremely fragile, so nobody in the organization could come out and say that he's available, or else they'll lose whatever value he has, right? The reason why he's expendable now is because he doesn't complement the big three. Everything is about the big three now, right? We've seen it in the past with Boston, with Miami, with any team that has a big three.
He could be Mario Chalmers.
He can't shoot the three.
He can't shoot. He's not even good at the foul line. You don't need him to distribute because you got Ben Simmons.
Exactly.
He can't rebound
What does he do that complements what Jimmy, Joel, and Ben do? Because he was supposed to be part of the big three.
I understand. I think – so I read up on this, right? It's the weirdest shit ever. Whoever his trainer is, his boy that –
they said they ain't talking no more, right?
Yeah.
He was the one that messed him up. It was him. So I'm glad to hear that because I watched his
– how was it him?
Yeah, because you know he trains a lot of other NBA players.
Nobody just does one guy.
I'll send you guys the article that I read. It was very detailed, and this guy spent months there, and he went through the whole situation. And there was a mixtape package of Fultz when he was in Washington. Oh, if you saw this, you'd be like, yeah, I understand. I don't know totally why they picked him up. He had everything.
Of course.
He had everything, bro.
Total package.
If he ever get that back, it's going to be great.
And all it is just a shooting. He has everything else. He gets to the lane. He just can't shoot now.
He had a nice little running layup last night over somebody. You know, it's just whatever. It's mental. Like you said, it's fragile. So this is why I think even though he may be expendable to them, I still think that now there's less pressure on you to be that third guy, to be that scorer, because Jimmy's there. And you just need to get back to playing ball.
See, this is the reason why I say he's expendable. For this roster, you know who's better than Fultz?
McConnell.
No.
Oh.
I like TJ.
Wait, you said better than Fultz.
Better than Fultz, right? I'm talking about
with this roster.
With this roster, I'll go get what's the point guard now for the Cavs? George Hill? That's his name? Yeah, George Hill.
Oh, hell no. No. No.
I would take George Hill over Fultz.
No.
George Hill fits a role better than what Markelle Fultz does now.
Find somebody else. I can't name George Hill.
I can give you a lot of other players.
Okay, but not George Hill.
But
George Hill-like player, okay.
Oh, fine. George Hill-like player. But all I'm saying is that the way Philly is now constructed, right, I'd much rather have guys that are championship role players versus a guy with potential. Because what does this trade do? It says we're in win now mode.
It does.
And obviously with the ages of Embiid and Simmons, your window is still big.
But here's the other
Jimmy's
thing.
Not too old either.
And they're gonna give him 190 and 5. How long before Ben Simmons wanna leave? Because I've been hearing that he and Embiid aren't quite gelling.
Really? I thought they were cool. I thought they were
not really.
There's only one person I hear say that.
They both
Who was
wanted,
that?
Colin. That's the only person I've heard say that.
Nah, I've been seeing it out there. I didn't even know he was saying that because I don't really listen.
Well, Colin has something against Philly, doesn't he?
No.
I think he doesn't really care for Embiid like that.
Colin just pushes his show. Yeah. But, yeah, I didn't know Colin was saying that. So, Colin, but I've been hearing, on some other podcasts, this basketball podcast, Simmons, Embiid is the alpha, and Embiid thinks and says this is his team. Simmons wants his own team, but he's not developing enough to have his own team.
It's a shooter league, and if you can't, you know.
Well, I don't even think that's true, but I don't think it's that. I think it's just ego.
Because if Ben Simmons had a jump shot or a mid range at the least, he would easily be the best player on that team.
But it's True. But with them, it's egos. Who's the guy? Whose team is it?
Yeah, it's a young Kobe and Shaq scenario.
Yeah, this is it early. So now you bring a Jimmy in there who's probably going to assume that mantle as the second alpha guy. Vet,
yeah.
At what point will Ben be like, all right, yeah, I'm good?
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, if your play does all of the talking, and in sports, that's how I believe it. You could talk some smack, but then you got to back it up. And I think Ben Simmons, and I said this like 2 years ago to you, Ken, when we were talking about Philly and what Philly can be, and you know, you're like, oh man, I didn't know Embiid was that damn good, this, that, and the third. And I said that still the most important player is Ben Simmons, because Embiid can't do what he does unless you got a guy like Ben Simmons doing what he does.
No, I feel you, but I'm talking about
Simmons. I know. His psyche. Yeah, like, his psyche is where, you know, he wants it to be his squad.
Because he don't look the same.
Well, I've always thought he had that nonchalant type of demeanor. Because people always question that, like his motor.
I thought that too until I saw him play.
No, because at LSU people thought that too.
But LSU was.
Nick, when do we see how special Ben Simmons was? When Embiid got hurt and they went on that 16-game winning streak. And we were like, oh, my God, this dude is
because he was doing everything.
He was killing
it. And I think it's Stephen A. that keeps saying it. He's a jump shot away from being LeBron. He really is. So to me, that's why I keep saying that your game will dictate where you are in terms of the pecking order on your team. He has to develop a jump shot.
And there's some question about his work ethic, too.
What about
I didn't know about that.
What about – so you mentioned – this move makes them – we're winning now, championship now. Mm-hmm. What does this do for them in the East?
They're top four.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Like, solidified.
What were they before that?
They were top four, but they were a big question mark. Now they're solidified. Like, they are a championship contender.
In the ranking, where would you rank them in the top four?
Like, today?
Yeah, today.
Out of respect, number three or four. I have them second. Ooh, I forgot about Toronto. So I have them third. I'll pay so you the put Raptors and the Bucks in respect.
So you put them above the Celtics?
Absolutely. The Celtics are playing.
Why is
like,
that?
Because they're a 500 ball club.
Yeah, yeah. They're struggling right now. They're figuring it out. But they're number one in defense. Like almost all the defensive stats are number one.
And their
one
offense is what?
Is almost last.
And you love that. Yeah. You said that they can figure out offense. Okay, defense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can figure out. You can figure out the. See, the reason why I'm not worried about the Celtics, number one, Brad Stevens. Number two, it's not like you ain't got offensive talent. You just do. You got to figure it out. The fact that I think it's harder to get a team to communicate and to buy in and to play together. And when you play defense the way they play defense, everybody's bought in. It's just I feel that.
I don't know about that.
Why you say that?
I think Jaylen Brown eventually is going to be a problem.
I think it's Rozier has talked
Rozier
about.
Rozier's the guy.
He's talked about, like, I need to learn how to play with my – like, utilize my minutes the best because mm-hmm. I'm not going to get as much as I did last year because obviously there was a lot of injuries and he got mm-hmm. a lot of time. I think Gordon Hayward, they're still trying to figure out what lineup, what package, what situations he fits best in. And I still think people are still waiting to see, like, the real Kyrie Irving.
We're seeing Kyrie.
Well, I mean, like
Kyrie back.
Yeah, Kyrie is back.
I still think he still has another gear.
Nah. But that's champion. That's championship mode.
Yeah,
we're seeing mid-season form Kyrie Irving. Like the guy that I last year I like through the first 15, 20 games I was saying that is
but
the MVP.
But you know what we're also seeing? I think we're also seeing a Kyrie that recognizes that this team is in trouble.
So did you hear his comments?
What did he say?
He said that
about
this
AD,
team
like a 15-year yep. veteran that can.
That it could come show in. And now you had somebody, his name was LeBron James now.
Yeah.
You had somebody, now you got your own squad.
Well, you got somebody on the open market named Carmelo Anthony.
Get out of here! Melo's dead on this show, man. Mr. Disrespect, you can't bring him up no more.
Which makes me question his commitment to Boston if they continue down this path.
And what did I say last time we talked? What did they need to do last week?
With who?
With the whole Boston squad. Come on now.
I can't remember. I'm old.
Trade for AD.
Oh.
Last week before Jimmy. They have to make that move.
I think they are going to make a
move. If they don't make that move, and that's the only move to make. There is no other move. They have to make the AD move. They have to.
I think Jalen and Rozier may be gone. But I think they're reluctant to trade Rozier because Kyrie Irving isn't reliable when it comes to his health.
Well, they got Marcus Smart still, right?
They got Marcus
Smart. But he's no Rozier.
But they don't need him to score. They just need him to be the point guard.
Also, if Irving go down, you want to put Rozier in the starting unit?
No, I'm talking about Smart.
I mean, Smart.
But it's also what you bring back from the Pelicans. Like I said, it's not only AD. You got to bring back one of these three guys. Etuan Moore, Elfrid Payton, or Jrue Holiday. One of them three guys got to come back. And what that does is that gives you insurance for Kyrie. Because if Kyrie goes down, I'm fine with starting Jrue and having Jason Tatum and having AD. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with having Elfrid Payton. Even you know how I feel about him. You was really high. I'm like, nah. But in that system, in the way that they want to, they're already the number one team defensively. Right, so you don't lose much defensively. Obviously, you don't get the spacing, you don't get that, but he can attack. He can turn the corner, and then Etuan Moore is the best shooter out the three. You know what I'm saying? You can start Marcus Smart and Etuan Moore. You know, or Yabusele. You know what I'm saying? So to me, at the end of the day, as long as you get one of those three guys back, you can give up all those draft picks. You can give up Jalen, Terry, and Gordon, and you'll be fine. You're not going to be missing for depth. There's still a buyout market that these championship teams are going to want some of these older guys. Like, I'm pretty sure J.R. Smith is probably going to get bought out. You know what I'm saying? By buyout season, right? Like, before the trade deadline, he going to get bought out if they don't trade him already. You know what I'm saying? There's going to be guys that can help teams. You know what I'm saying? So but they got to make the AD move. And they can't wait another week.
Before the 2 months,
you know why? Is it easier to get a player acclimated now or when you got a month and a half before the playoffs?
It's AD. He can do whatever.
But I feel you, but I'm just saying.
I hear what you're saying.
Getting used to a guy. Hey, where do you like the ball? Do you like pick and rolls? Do you want me to throw it high on the lobs? Where like all of that type of stuff you got to figure out.
Talent wise, yes, absolutely. I don't think that's going to work for Kyrie. Kyrie wants to be the man, dog. He's Kyrie Bryant. he's the Mamba, his own Mamba.
But here's the thing, though.
That's his favorite player, ain't it?
Yeah. He thinks he's Kobe.
But here's the thing, right? Obviously, what did we establish about 2 weeks ago? It's all about the money, right? When we were talking about Paul George and his situations. So you mean to tell me that you think Kyrie is going to leave close to $50 million on the table, dog? Like, I don't see that. I don't see AD leaving close to 60.
So Boston can give him the most money?
Yeah. Because when
Do you think they give him that deal?
I'm talking about psyche, bro.
Yes, I understand the psyche, but at the end of the day, it is a business.
Who are they gonna? True money talks, but if AD ends up on Boston, who are we gonna talk about? AD.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about AD, but
Kyrie can't handle that
because AD would be the best player on that team.
He is the best player on he would be the best player on the team. However, again, it goes from being the best. Or being the reason why, like you know, what was I watching last night? I can't remember what I was watching, but it was I was watching one of the players only cast. You know, on Monday nights on NBA TV, they only do players only.
Yeah,
and I think C Webb was talking, and he was talking about you know situation this, that, and the third. But something stuck out with me. I'm definitely gonna keep this. There's a difference between wanting to win and being the reason why you win.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
You know what I'm saying?
I saw that.
Like that, and I had to think about that, and I said, oh, damn. You know, when I was coming up, did I want to win or did I want to be the reason? And I wanted to be the reason a lot of the time until I got older, right? And I think that for Kyrie, he wants to be the reason. And even with AD, he would still be the reason. That goes to the whole best player versus most important player. I don't care if Boston gets AD. They cannot win a championship without Kyrie. The same way Golden State cannot win a championship without Steph Curry, even if Steph is playing bad out there. You got to guard the man 40 feet away from the basket. Just the intangibles of what Kyrie brings, doesn't matter what AD does. Just like it didn't matter what LeBron did. If he didn't have Kyrie,
they wouldn't won that championship.
They wouldn't won that championship. Yeah. And granted, they needed LeBron.
They needed the block.
They needed both.
The block. They needed the shot. But the shot. Yeah. They needed the shot.
The block and the shot. But do we talk about the shot?
Oh, we talk about the shot. You don't talk about the shot.
They don't talk about the shot, bro.
Nah, they talk about the block more than the shot.
They talk about the block way more than the shot.
Yeah, they kind of do.
It's
I talk about the shot.
I talk about the shot.
It's kind of ridiculous, to be honest, that they talk about the block more than the shot.
Mm-hmm. Because they probably think that if not for the block, Iguodala makes a layup and then the game is out. Like, isn't the game over?
I mean, I get that,
they go up four.
It's LeBron. We know why, but clearly because LeBron made the block. Like, nigga, you didn't make the goddamn shot.
When does he make the shot?
If he would have made the shot,
I don't know.
That's different.
If he would have made the shot,
he gets elevated to a whole other level.
Yeah. It would have been over
for the Cleveland championship. Yes,
it would have been over.
Yeah, but the fact, because there was a long time. They was both missing shots for a minute, then or 2 minutes.
Curry got checked by Kevin Love. Mm-hmm.
Like, it was anybody's game for the last couple minutes.
Yeah, it was. Yep. But
the block was important.
It was important to the sequence of events to the whole thing.
And people, LeBron said he was ready for whatever. But when you watch that play, because they use it for a lot of promo and stuff like that, LeBron was so high, he literally had to move his head away from the rim, and both his hands hit the backboard. So he was literally ready for a reverse to block with the left, and he got the shot that he got with the right hand. So at the end of the day, look, people may be talking about the block a little bit more, but at the end of the day, you couldn't win it without Kyrie. And maybe AD does something in a championship game where everybody talks about it, but at the end of the day, they're going to need Kyrie to win.
The Rockets. So I knew something was off with the Rockets this year, and I joked about the Melo effect, but –
You ain't joking, man. You gotta be serious.
He is being a scapegoat. Like Dwayne Wade said, he's a scapegoat. He's being blacklisted. They lost their defensive coach. And I think I asked that before on the podcast. I was like, do they still have the same guy? Yeah, Jeff Zilick retired.
Yeah, he retired.
And now he's coming back.
He retired in the beginning of the season. He came back in the middle of it, I guess, because a lot of people – I guess somebody called him and said, hey, we'll pay you whatever. Come back, please. But if you look at their defensive standings of the last, I think I forgot who brought up this stat. I think it might have been Marcellus Wiley. But if you look at their defensive standings in the last 3 to 4 years, last year was an anomaly based on how their rankings are defensively. Last year they were ranked 7th, but every other year they've been at least 20 or worse.
I know.
So Melo wasn't the reason why. And then on top of that, you lost Ariza. You lost Mbah Mute. You lost your defensive coach.
The defensive coach is the key to me. Wait, hold on now.
They played Capella, and he ain't playing like a guy that's worth that money.
Nah, he sure isn't.
How many times did we get fooled by contract year?
He can still play the way he played last year.
But he's obviously not playing.
But it wasn't just that, because, it was kind of like an Omer Sieg situation, like when he was in Chicago playing behind Dwight Howard. Remember? Because they had Capella and Dwight. And Capella was outplaying Dwight because Capella was doing what they wanted Dwight to do. Rim run, play defense, get rebounds, get extra possessions, and you'll get yours. But we're not going to feature you. And that's an easy style of basketball. Like, when you're that style of big, ain't much thinking. Set a pick and go to the rim, bro.
He was one of their most important players. Back. He was part of the big three. He got to get back
exactly.
on track, bro.
He got to.
Granted, Chris Paul and Harden been inconsistent in the lineup with injuries and suspensions.
Yeah, but Chris Paul and James Harden have nothing to do with being the back line of the defense. Mm. And that's part of Capella's problem this year. He's just not as engaged defensively. He just isn't. He's not getting the blocks. He's not getting the rebound totals. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like where you at.
Yeah. So we'll see. I bring it up because I just want to put a pin in it on this show to kind of watch what happens from here now that he's returning, because I think this came out on November 5th. So I don't know if he's back with them yet. But let's see how the defense pick up and see how well they play together. And we'll see if that was a thing that they were going through. If it was a defense coordinator. We don't know what's going to happen with Melo, but I think they're being somewhat unfair to him. But, it is what it is. And the fact that nobody wants Melo.
No one has said nobody wants Melo. He's still talking to people. Philly, what's up?
Probably like, nah, we no, good.
Philly.
Yeah.
Philly, what's up?
Like, nah, we good.
Oh, I got to call Q because he want to weigh in on the Philly thing. But before I do that, Durant and Draymond, man. I told y'all something to look off of with Draymond.
He's just the – he's worse than the third wheel. He's like sixth wheel. Is he? Because they got DeMarcus. So, like
– But it's he got suspended, bro. That's – I don't know how well that's going to sit with him.
Well, because if you look – if you have been paying – I know people in the Bay Area have been paying attention closely to this, obviously, as far as, like, how Golden State is trying to convince Kevin Durant it's in your best interest to stay. Like, mm-hmm. I saw pictures of him going to the new arena. They showing him everything. Like, they saying, like, bruh, they doing the Blake Griffin thing that they did in the Clippers. Like, they might retire his jersey in the new arena before it's even opened. So, I think with Draymond cussing him out the way he did, especially about the topic of free agency, they like, bruh, you need to get the hell away. Because we're trying... You don't attract bees with vinegar. You know what I'm right. saying? Like you gotta sweeten things up. You can't yell at him because obviously he's an emotional guy and he doesn't respond well to backlash. We've seen that's why he had the burner accounts and everything. Like he wants to feel like he is in control of all his.
And what did he say? You didn't need us. Wait, we didn't need you. You needed us. Something like that is what he told him. That is a very good point. I think you might be right. Because Draymond has done what he's always done. They got into it last year, remember? And they've always kind of swept it under the rug. But now all of a sudden, Kevin Durant's a free agent. Back-to-back finals MVP, back-to-back titles, threatening to leave.
They winning. They not trying to break it.
Now all of a sudden, Draymond's expendable, and we can't have you yelling at our prize, you know, acquisition like that. So that is very, very, very interesting. It's something I'm going to have to keep my eye on.
I think management looked at him like, hey, bro, if he leave, you gone too.
Yeah, because, you know, they're talking about this rose to a level that was intolerable or something along those lines. And I'm like, but Draymond has always done that.
Well, and also, they're two grown-ass men. They need to learn how to handle their own
And it's basketball. They always kind of get into as men. It when it comes to basketball.
Yeah, but you can't call one of the franchise guys a little bitch. You can't do that. I mean,
there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in barbershops that said the same thing about Durant.
Of course, but that's barbershops.
You telling me that you really think that Draymond hasn't called Curry, Clay,
he's or cussed KD out that, that I before? Think he's cussed out everybody in that organization.
Hell yeah. I'm not saying that he hasn't cussed them out, but I just think that the fact that he was trying to back his play as well. And then calling KD out of his name that way just compounded everything. Because did you watch it?
I watched a couple of different angles. And I'm not disagreeing with you. It just I'm with Nick. It feels weird that they're gonna enact this type of punishment on him for something he's done his whole career.
But I think that, you know, last year what was the kind of the aura around Golden State that was the toughest championship ever,
yeah,
right?
and what did David West said, you don't know the things exactly. that we've been through.
So I think that this is trying to nip that in the bud because last year was so damn difficult. Like, hey, bro, like we can't bring that stuff that we was having going on last year to this
but
year.
But what was going on last year?
It was just a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff that happened in the locker room that didn't get out.
Because obviously it didn't affect them winning, so it got to be something else.
Hey, because when you got talent like that and you have a system and everybody believes in the system, it's not like there's dissension on the team. It's just that. To get up to always play and to always get everybody's best shot when a lot of other teams get nights off and they don't because of the pressure outside, because of you arguably have the greatest shooter, you have the greatest shooting backcourt, and then you added the next greatest shooter in the NBA.
Cheat code.
You know what I'm saying? There's just a lot of pressure and tension to live up to certain expectations, and then I'm going to start looking at you like, damn, bro, why didn't you make that shot? I got you a wide-open shot. Ain't you the best shooter in the damn world? Ain't this a pressure situation? So now you start to cannibalize each other. You know what I'm saying?
But that play that Draymond did is what Draymond again has done.
But Draymond is one of the smarter players in the NBA, right?
True.
Draymond also understands his position, right? Because true. The man averages 7, 7, and 7.
Okay.
He ain't averaging 27 and 7 and 7.
He didn't have a triple double that night. Okay.
Right. But I'm just saying he's not even a 10-point scorer. So what are you doing in that possession with no time left? Right? They've been in that. I know this is one of the greatest shots I've ever seen. Remember a couple years ago when Steph Curry came down and hit that damn near OKC? Yeah. Similar situation, right? Steve Curry ain't gonna call no timeouts in those type of scenarios. We know that. That's his MO. That's how he likes to roll with this team. What is Draymond going to do with 6 seconds to go?
Because that's how he plays and that's how he's always
played. No,
no. He should have passed the ball.
You saying that he should have known better?
Yes. Because he's a leader on that team and he gives the ball to the guys that score.
Who said he had his Carlton moment?
That's all I was going to say. Did Kyle say
that? That's all that was.
I know this. When I saw Durant clapping, I was saying, Draymond, what are you doing?
Yeah, to give him the rock.
But I'm also saying that Draymond, as a playmaker, as a guy with his IQ, this isn't outside of his wheelhouse. Hasn't he hit game winners before for that team?
But that's not really.
But he ain't the man. He ain't the man.
Game winners?
But if you entrust Draymond, like, aren't you kind of...
It's scenario-based, Ken.
He's the fifth best player on that team, bro.
Whoa. I understand that, but...
Ken, as a very organized and detailed coaching staff, right... You go over scenarios, right? Bill Belichick, how did he win that Super Bowl against Seattle? He knew that they were going to call that slant. He knew that. Why did he know that? Because you go over the details over and over and over again, and you practice scenario-based situations, Ken. You practice 2 minutes. You practice the two-minute drill. You practice last second. You practice these things. And you can't tell me. I'm outside of the organization. I think everybody understands that in late-game scenarios, 1A and 1B is Steph Curry and KD. The second option is Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever happens after that is whatever happens after that. And two out of your top three options was in the quarter, in the game, and your 1A or 1B, whatever which letter or whatever letter you want to put KD as, was calling for the rock.
But
you give him the rock.
And he should have. He messed up. But I can see Draymond defending himself. Saying that this is just what I do. I felt like I had a better option.
A better option to do what?
It's inexcusable, man.
It is what it is. It's inexcusable.
And first of all, hold on, Ken.
There's only one.
First of all, he took the rebound from KD, right?
Okay, yeah, he did.
He took the rebound from KD. That's number one. Number two, you're dribbling down court when there's three or four defenders on your side. And you were coming diagonal across.
He had a step over on Durant.
It doesn't matter though. No. But what
he grabbed it and then he was off to the race. Fine. Durant was still clapping.
That's fine. But at the end of the day, what was he gonna do when it was really like a 1-on-3 scenario?
For his team, he's the worst shooter on the floor. He should not be doing those shots.
But he's done it. They've gave him free reign to do that stuff in the past, and now all of a sudden they're gonna spin
that. That was then, this is now. You have KD, he should get the ball. If not him, Steph, if Steph's not there, then Klay. You are literally the fourth option, and that's if Cousins ain't
with KD.
Hmm?
I just did Draymond game winners. I found two.
Some, what is that, Michigan State? He knows the writing on the wall, he's expendable, and he's upset about that because he was hoping to get a second, another contract.
Oh, my bad. That was a defensive play.
That's what I'm saying, Ken. Like, look, at the end of the day, right?
Oh, he hit one in Miami in 2012. Hold on. I got it. I'm pulling up the receipts. Man.
Come on. That was when my niece was born.
At the end of the day, even if Draymond took the rebound and he started dribbling up court, by the time he got the half court, he should have stopped the ball. Hey, where, KD, where you at? Come get this hot potato, bro. Come put this thing in the hole. Yeah, that because my thing is, I don't have a problem with him even taking a rebound from KD. I don't have a problem with him advancing the ball. But once he got past half court, there were more defenders than there were offensive players.
True.
And then what were you doing? Like, what was going through his mind? What play were you going to make? Because you didn't have
to close this game out. I'm calling game.
Okay, Paul Pierce.
I'm just saying, man.
Yeah, it's a wrap. That team's breaking up.
Oh, yeah. I've been told y'all, though. Financially, yeah. You can't afford it. The writing's
on the wall.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's getting more and more louder as time goes on.
We're only seeing that because, number one, we live in a social media age. Number two, they broke the Bulls record. And number three, they're by far the most talented team we've ever seen in the history of the NBA.
DeMarcus Cousins, boy, he tried to get that shit on the wraps quick. He like, hey, nigga, hey, come on, man. I'm trying to get this ring right quick, man. Come on, Draymond. Like calm down. Like, keep it together. You know, he had his glasses on and everything. I said, look at DeMarcus up there trying to calm down. He said he want that ring. He said, hey, nigga, don't mess up my chance of getting this ring. Yeah.
You think this is the year that they missed the championship?
They're just too talented.
Yep. I told y'all this.
So who's getting it then if the Warriors not getting it?
Hey, man, you already know. I called mine already.
Bro, they just started winning your team.
Hey, man.
You talking about the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm not backing down. I stand by
my
conviction.
There's about four teams.
So the championship is still coming out of the West. So none of the Eastern Conference teams can beat the Lakers.
I really like what Philly did, bro. I think that was a good move.
Toronto still looks good.
Yeah, you see who they put in the starting lineup now?
Siakam. Yeah, I like him. We
had a conversation last night. Yeah. They got two of the same players on Toronto.
They got three. OG Anunoby too.
That's what I'm saying. They all look the same.
Yeah, I'm not. I like what the Bucks are doing, but I don't know if I'm all in yet on them.
I'm a fan of their coaching staff. I love Bud when he was here. You obviously see the influence of what he has, right? Like they come in, everybody's passing the rock. I don't believe, like, when you look at their second best player, it's such a drop off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, from their best player, and then if you look at their second best player versus everybody, all of the contenders in the East second best player, I just don't know how they overcome.
Yep. What up, Q?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I got you. What's going on? What's going on with your Sixers, man? Y'all going to the tight? Y'all gonna win it all now?
With Jimmy?
Yeah.
We probably need like one more piece.
What piece is that?
I don't know. Realistically, probably this season. Maybe we'll probably need to get somebody like Ariza or Korver to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Both.
We lost two players in like the trade. So we got Jimmy back for Covington and Sarge. Sarge, man. Like, I think that, like, the thing about Sarge would be, I think he's a good player. I just think that him and Ben Simmons don't mesh because Dario, one of his strengths is having the ball in his hand. I think that he'll actually flourish in Minnesota next to Towns because having first of all, the defense of that apparently is going to be pretty bad, but I think they'll make up for it in really good offensive sets because Dario can put the ball in his hand, but he was underdeveloped in Philly because Ben does the same things that he does, except Dario's a much better shooter. Covington is obviously a big loss in terms of defense, but I think that Jimmy makes up for it a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jimmy, like, I think he is a better two-way player, but I think that Covington with Jimmy would have been incredible, but I'm really, you know, obviously that wouldn't have been able to happen. The other piece I was talking about earlier, you need a guy like Kyle Korver, you need a guy like Ariza, you need a guy like Marquise Morris if the Lakers want to shop him. To have like a two-way wing that can switch and do things. Because right now, Boston looks kind of really shaky right now. I think they're like 7-6. But that doesn't mean anything. And, you know, that doesn't really mean anything because whenever they play, they turn into a gargantuan team for some reason. They play, you know, the Nuggets or whatever. They look like, you know, a really bad team. And when they play us, they get up to play us. So we have to have another wing. And Korver gives us a shooter, but I don't know if he gives us defense. We need a guy like Ariza, who's a veteran, expiring contract, cheap contract, that we can absorb. And then next summer go after a free agent. But I like the Jimmy trade. He gives us a guy that we can just give the ball to with a minute left and be like, just go get us a bucket. Can work the pick and roll. with him and Ben, him and Embiid, many options that we can do on offense. And it's just like finally we actually have a guy who can get his own shot besides our center. And I think that he'll also not have to work as hard on defense as he did in Minnesota, because Towns is not as good as Embiid on defense. Embiid looks like defensive player of the year candidate along with the MVP candidate this year. So I'm really proud of the move. Also really excited that we didn't have to give up a first-round pick either. So I guess we'll just see where it goes from there. But I like what Philly did in this trade, man. I think we got a really good chance at going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I need to see how we mesh on offense. I think Jimmy said in his presser today that Tibbs was the one who was asking him to play a lot of ISO ball. So I know that a lot of the concerns are that he won't be able to move with us. I think the Sixers pass the ball the most in the NBA of any other team. You know, like the ball moves like 20 times in the possession, like almost like 16 times before a shot. Jimmy gives us the ability to get a one-on-one ISO, obviously. But I think that he said in his presser that he's able to do the same offense as us. He was just asking Minnesota to be the ISO guy, so he doesn't have to be as ball dominant. But I think a mixture of the two should bring us some good results.
What about what's up with your boy Fultz, man?
That's just an enigma, man. Like I've never seen anything like it before. I think that when it comes to him, there's a lot of moving parts happening. There's a lot of like moving, I guess you could say, variables. But like on the one hand, we have a rumor going around that he fell off a motorcycle or a BMX bike, and he he fell off of a BMX bike like a month before season started.
Oh,
and
okay.
The team doesn't want to disclose it, so it would make some sense. But that's just kind of a shaky rumor to me, that a lot of people have been saying that, oh, it was an injury, and the team is embarrassed that another one of their draft picks got hurt. So Colangelo just made up this whole excuse that he changed his shot. That's one rumor. The second rumor is that he did change his shot, and then couple that with some mental health struggles where he has like severe performance anxiety to the point that he got severe yips that he made himself forget how to shoot. I've never seen anything like that in my life, where a player that was as talented as him allowed the lights of, you know, being in the NBA to make him forget how to be as talented as he was. I've never seen anything like that. And the third rumor is just that he's a complete, like, complete performance anxiety ruined his shot. The second rumor is, like, you know, more about, like, the shot and then the performance anxiety worsened it. The third one is just, like, he has it and it made him lose the shot. So either way, either he needs to go see a professional that can go fix his shoulder, or he needs to go see a psychiatrist who can help him with his anxiety, because I think that this is way beyond just a normal situation now, because he drops his trainer. I think during the summer he started training with Jason Tatum and Joel Embiid's trainer, and then there's Drew Hamlin, and he's a part of this thing called Pure Sweat, and he was helping him fix his jump shot. So for the whole time, I'm just like, okay, cool. Markel's going to be back. He's going to be doing his thing, and he's working with Drew, and, you know, he has two, you know, great clients and whatnot. He has a whole list of clients in the NBA, so this should be good. And then just last night, apparently, it came out that Markel dropped Drew Hamlin out, and he doesn't work with Drew anymore. And it's just like, what is going on? Like, he drops his first trainer, he drops his second trainer, and it's like, dude, I need more transparency from the organization about this situation, because they keep saying it's just like him having to work on his game. He's going to keep working on his game. But what happened? Like, what is the what happened? Like, how do you not get to the bottom of that? Like, I need to see from like the front office. I need to hear from them that, like, damn, one time, know, I need to hear like one time.
I think
he woke up one day and he forgot how to shoot. I need to hear that.
It's the front office. It's the front office basically saying he's a bust, and we don't want to admit it. I think if it is mental health, then that's interesting because we're starting to hear more about that in the NBA. But I feel like they might be using that as an excuse. I think it's really just like your point earlier.
If you have performance anxiety, like that's
diagnosable. But he balled out in Washington.
But understand this though. Like, do you know the Markelle Fultz story though? Like before college?
No, I do not.
So Markelle was a guy, you know, kind of like me. Like he never grew. Like he was very small for a very long time. And then all of a sudden he grew. Like, cause he wasn't like on anybody's boards. Like this guy was literally like underground. Like nobody knew about him because he wasn't that nice. And then he grew. And, you know, a lot of short people, they got skills because you got to be skilled if you're going to play. But now he had the size with it. And he grew into his size his junior year. Junior, senior year, he dominated. Then that's when he went to Washington. He dominated. So it's not like he's been like this prototype, the next one, chosen one kind of guy. I can see where one day you're nothing. Next day, everybody's on you. You know, you get drafted number one. That's a lot of different factors going in. And then what if, you know, you have that anxiety, you're coming out, your shot ain't looking what it was, you don't know what's going on. Like there's a lot. I don't want to dismiss it, because what it sounds like, and I'm not saying that this is what you're saying or doing, but it just sounds very dismissive.
No, I'm not dismissing it, but I'm just saying, but at the end of the day, like you mentioned earlier, he's expendable. He doesn't move the needle for them in a positive direction. They've used another top draft pick that hasn't panned out due to injury or for some other reason. They just don't fit with the team. Mm-hmm. And the organization just doesn't want to take that that loss on their resume as far as the whole quote unquote process system.
But I think by you saying that the organization doesn't want to acknowledge that they made a mistake and they're actually saying what it may be, which is performance anxiety, it makes you sound like you're dismissing
the performance anxiety. He just said they haven't came out. They're not transparent. Officially. These are all just rumors. Of course. There's multitude. He just named about three rumors.
Yeah, but I'm just saying we can see that this could be performance anxiety. Like look at that free throw, dog. Like I never seen that like that from a guard. I done seen big men with funky shots and hitches and stuff
Anthony
like that.
Anthony Mason free throws better.
Exactly.
Better than that.
Like I've never seen a guard that can shoot in college shoot a free throw like that. Like to me, that's all mental.
Yeah, like this isn't normal. I don't think people understand that Markelle Fultz, like a lot of his comparisons in college were like literally people saying he compares to Brandon Roy, James Harden. You know what I'm saying? Like if you look, you know what I'm saying? Like if you look at all of the draft expresses, you look at the ESPN, you look at the Bleacher Reports, everyone is comparing him the summer of 17 to all these people. And then out of nowhere, in fall 17, so summer league, your shot looks fine. And then then camp starts, and you don't have a shot.
It's crazy.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not normal. And it's also funny to me because I don't want to say that Markelle Fultz is a bad player right now, because he's literally like our only guard on the team that can get any type of penetration, that can guard small guys.
Besides, Jimmy.
Like TJ, I guess.
You got Jimmy.
Like, TJ was balling out for y'all.
But he always has been. Yeah, he's been the same guy.
He's a scrappy guy.
Yeah, you know, and like thing is, I was like, he's not doing bad for us. He's getting better. He actually knows how to get to the hole. It's just that shot, man. He cannot shoot the ball. He refuses to shoot it if it's anything beyond like a mid-range like pull up. And the thing is, though, is that I see in him like a lot of potential to perhaps get some type of reclamation back of any type of shot. But the thing is, though, is I don't think the organization wants to take a loss right now, like you said, because they literally can't. If you just drafted somebody at number one, you gave up a Sacramento Kings pick to do it, you have to see it through at least.
And Jason Tatum came out that draft, Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, and you know what I'm saying? Like, De'Aaron Fox, all these people, you can't take this loss and be like, damn, all right, let's move on. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just like Kuzma, like, you have too many players in that draft.
Yeah, it hurts.
Take the one that forgets how to shoot. And the thing is, though, that I want to dispel a lot of notions around this, because it's like, we can't act like we knew this was going to happen. If Markel Fultz projected, you know,
So remember last year I told you Lonzo was better than Markel, and I would have took Lonzo. And if they would have had Lonzo, they'd be in a better position right now than having Markel.
Man, the thing is, though, is that
2020, man.
The caveat here is that
I'm only 100.
If Markel kept his shot, I'm still saying Markel is a better player. I still think he is. I still think in the NBA you need a guy who can shoot the ball and has some defensive versatility. And you see it, even when he has no shot right now, he's able to defend some twos and some threes on like a switch. I'm not saying Alonzo can't do that sometimes either, but I think that Fultz's ability to pull up off the dribble in college was such a tantalizing skill. Mm-hmm. So you look at what he projects to be in the NBA, that deal still made sense to me. And if he was able to shoot now, I'd still stand behind giving up the pick for him, because I think he's that good of a prospect. This is all mental to me, man. It just looks mental. And it's like, I want to, you know, bring a reference in, because I think that this is similar to, like, what Nelson Aguilar was for the Eagles. And Nelson Aguilar, not many people know his story if you're not an Eagles fan, but he plays on the team now. And he literally had a case of the yips where he was dropping every ball that came his way. This was like Chip Kelly's last year when Sam Bradford was the quarterback. And every ball that came his way, he dropped it. And it was to the point where we had to bench him. We were like, yo, just take a day off. I think we benched him like 2 weeks. In those 2 weeks, we assigned him to go see a sports psychiatrist. And then the next year, we win the Super Bowl. He has the most catches of his career. So, and I think that if you look at a story that's out right now on ESPN.com about Aaron Gordon, Aaron Gordon talks about his performance anxiety and how last year was the first year that he was able to actually live up to his talent, because he was overthinking every shot. He was thinking about where should I put the ball on the floor. He was thinking about it. He was seeing all the people in the crowd staring at him. And you get those cold sweats at the free throw line. Those are things that really matter.
Dang, like LeBron in L.A. God damn, he got the LeBrons.
Hey, LeBron might have that.
LeBron clearly has
the yips at the free throw line.
All right, man. Well, we're going to get out of here, man. But, yeah, it was a big trade, man. I definitely wanted to, you know, you the sixth man, you know, repping Philly. So we definitely had to get your take on everything that went down. So, all right, man. We'll holler at you later.
All right,
well, that's going to do it for us, man. We're going to get out here. We'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.
Peace.